Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, June 11th, 2016. This is episode 1295. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Atlassian. Unleash your team's potential with collaborative software tools like HipChat and Jira. It'll enable you to work and communicate better together. Visit Atlassian.com to learn more. And by TunnelBear. TunnelBear is the simple privacy app that makes it easy to browse privately and enjoy a more open internet. To learn more and get your free TunnelBear, visit trytunnelbear.com/techguy. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now to take advantage of their Father's Day limited time sale through June 13th only. Enter the promo code TechGuy for a free color upgrade, too. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, and virtual reality and artificial intelligence, machine learning. Whatever has a chip in it, that's what we'll talk about. 8888-ASK-LEO. The phones are working. Yay. 888-827-5536. We had quite a drama last week because an electrical fire cut the fiber line between us and the outside world. It feels like we're living in an igloo in the great frozen north. But in fact, we're in just Petaluma, Northern California, in the wine country. But the fiber line that connected our town with the big city, San Rafael, and Marin County, the big city, and from there on to the bigger city, and I'm sure the rest of the world, got an electrical fire. And I didn't know, but that's a lot of fiber, 216 strands of fiber between us and San Rafael. That's a lot of fiber. That's enough bandwidth to probably serve the whole world. I don't know why there's so much fiber. Actually, we're kind of all benefiting from the big bubble of 1999, believe it or not. There's a whole arm of economic theory about booms and busts. Bubbles happen all the time. People always mention the great tulip bubble of the 17th century in Holland. Yeah, there was, some kind of crazy investment in tulips and tulip bulbs. This was maybe the first recorded bubble. Tulip mania in 1637. Individual single tulip bulbs sold for, and you can't really say how much, you know, how many guilders it was, because that wouldn't tell you anything, but you could put it in terms of the annual wage, 10 times the annual wage of a skilled craftsman for one tulip bulb. It's an economic or a speculative bubble. Wow. And we had one, of course, the great internet bust of 1999-2000. There was a lot of crazy investment in the internet. Remember that? Pets.com and, you know, in hindsight, probably a lot of those businesses would be doing fine today. But maybe they were too early or whatever. The chairman of the Fed called it irrational exuberance. People overinvest and the values skyrocket. Nothing like anything that's going on today. But it all went crash in 2000. But we benefit from that because in the late 90s, huge amounts of the money that was taken from investors went to building infrastructure, and particularly fiber optics. And so there's a huge amount of fiber optic, high-speed glass. This is a glass cable that carries so much more data
than the copper cables that we've kind of been used to. And because everybody was making the assumption, the irrationally exuberant assumption, that the internet was going to transform the world, they put in a lot of fiber optic cable. If you look at the Wikipedia article for optical fiber, you'll see a fiber crew installing a 432 count, twice as big, cable underneath the streets of Midtown Manhattan. And it doesn't look much bigger, frankly. It's not a big, giant thing. It doesn't look much bigger than, a cable, just a regular cable. But, man, that's a lot of bandwidth. A lot of it is what we call dark fiber. That is, it's not turned on. It's not lit up. And so that means we have all this capacity underground that isn't even used yet, but was put there in the exuberant 90s when we had lots of cash to do that. That's good news. We're going to benefit from that. It raises the interesting question, though, and Ars Technica had a great piece on that this week. Does it make sense, these bandwidth caps that the cable companies and the internet service providers insist they have to put in place because we'll just use way too much bandwidth if they don't? Well, there's a lot of evidence that, in fact, that is not the case. That, in fact, bandwidth is pretty much free. And there's really no excuse except greed for companies to put bandwidth caps on your internet use. It's just a chance to make more money on it. Here's the reasoning. Because most internet service providers have what we call peering arrangements with other internet service providers, you know, they all have to interconnect or we wouldn't be able to see Netflix, right? Because that's coming from a different internet service provider to our internet service provider. But they have arrangements, peering arrangements to say, hey, look, you take our data for free, we'll take your data for free. That means the bits, the actual bits that you're getting, don't cost the cable company hardly anything. In most cases, they're free. They're free bits. Oh, but we have to build infrastructure, they say. That's true. That's true. You have to invest, capital investment. That can add up, but you do it once. And you can have a lot of capacity, as we know from this dark fiber. Once you've installed on that, you got all that capacity in there. You can just keep pumping more data into it without any cost at all. And so there's good evidence that bandwidth is essentially, you know, an incremental, very small incremental cost to all that bandwidth they're using. And I think this is important. It's hard to understand because we think of bandwidth, we think of bits as maybe like, I don't know, pork bellies or soybeans, like a thing that costs money. But in a way, but it's just, it doesn't. It doesn't. And really what's going on, I think, is greed. And that kind of explains why in many parts of the world they have better and faster and lower cost internet than we do, we who invented it. Now, the good news is most ISPs are kind of, they don't want to acknowledge it, but they're acknowledging it by removing and raising bandwidth caps. Comcast just raised its bandwidth cap. A number of internet service providers are eliminating their bandwidth caps. So when your cable company starts talking about bandwidth hogs and saying you're using too much, you're watching Netflix all night, or when your internet service starts to degrade because everybody in the neighborhood's watching too much Netflix, you should go to them and say, look, dudes, you're making a lot of money. Let's improve our bandwidth. What do you say? It's bad. We have a couple of Australians in here. It's terrible in Australia, isn't it? You've got because it was government run and then they turned over Telstra and these other companies to private industry. And you never got the investment that you really needed to have good bandwidth. And if we think we have bad bandwidth caps in the States, it's worse in other countries, Australia and Canada. But then you look at Scandinavia, where they're paying ridiculously $20 a month for gigabit internet. And you go, why? How come? Isn't that the same bits? Yeah, it's the same bits. What's interesting is where companies like Google come in with fiber and charge reasonable amounts of money. Suddenly, the cable companies find the ability to do the same. Oh, wait a minute. There's competition. Oh, we better lower our rates. Competition is the best thing for this in general. The more competition, the lower the costs, the better the service. And we got into all of this because the FCC allowed the cable companies to have a monopoly or sometimes a duopoly. It's going to get better. Better get better because, frankly, that's what powers the economy these days, isn't it? 8888-ASK-LEO. Anyway, all of which is to say our fiber optic was repaired. They spliced 216 individual threads of glass. That was hard. It took them a day to do it. But now we got the phone. So give me a ring. 8888. We got lots of bandwidth. Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Somebody has sent me this book, and I thought at first it was about you. Attack of the 50-Foot Helen.
Oof.
But in fact, it's the sweetheart of the internet. A series of comics from the late 90s about Helen, the sweetheart of the internet.
Hmm.
Hmm. I've never heard of this. Oracle. Google. Intel. Adobe. Huh. Huh. And then I got this one. I don't. Your entry into amateur radio. Looks like it's from Australia. The Wireless Institute of Australia. There he is with a Nissan Patrol in the middle of nowhere. He's in Victoria, the place to be. I don't know why they sent me this. This is the licensing requirements in Australia, I guess. How to get a ham license in Australia. Are you guys hams? You want to be a ham? No? No interest? You can teach your kids how to be hams. Your entry into amateur radio, the foundation license manual by the Wireless Institute of Australia. Huh. That's cool. I imagine the rules are similar because I would guess that this is there's some sort of international agreement about how this is all supposed to work. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number everywhere in the U.S. and Canada. If you're outside that area, we do have lots of listeners on the internet as well. You could call that number via Skype out. Shouldn't cost you anything because it's a toll-free number in the U.S. and Canada. 888-827-5536. Your call will be answered by Heather Hammond, the phone ranger. Hello, Heather Hammond. Hi-o, silver, and away.
Hello, Leo. Should I wear a mask?
Who was that masked woman? I see you've lined up some calls on our brand new shiny fiber optic cables.
Everyone sounds amazing.
I actually was watching a video on YouTube of splicing fiber optic cables. It's non-trivial. They have to have a special machine. I don't know how they fuse the glass together, but because you don't want to add imperfections. You know, that's why it works, because it's pure. So I'm curious. I don't know how they do it, but they did it. 216 strands. That's a lot.
Were you researching it because you were just going to go down there and do
it? I was going to go help. I was curious what they were doing and why it was actually mostly why it was taking so long.
Why it was taking so long.
It took 18 hours to splice 216 strands. But I'm glad they did it carefully because I see the calls are pouring in. So it's working. It's working. So who should I start
You will
with?
Love Scott in Orange County. He's got a big fat budget to buy some television cameras, et cetera.
Scott with a big fat budget.
For a good cause.
Hi, Scott.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks, Heather. What's up?
Yeah, the point is that retirement community I'm living in that has their own cable system and studio that only does 90 minutes of programming a day wants to spend $9,000 for three tripods and $58,000 for...
Wait a minute. They want to spend $3,000 a tripod?
Yeah.
Well, what is this? The military? What?
It's the seniors. That's the crazy part. We're, you know, we're a retirement community, and they just think they can, like, we're the government, and they can just throw down $3,000 a tripod.
Well, tell them they don't need to. That would be a start. You know, they're probably thinking about the old days of television. You know, when I was doing tech TV, 10, 15 years ago. We had pedestal cameras that did cost that much. They were $30,000, $40,000 each. They were very expensive. Now, today, we do the stuff I do, the internet broadcasts I do, with $800 consumer-grade HD camcorders, Canon Vixia camcorders, and it's better quality than the Tech TV stuff. So, so just as computers have benefited greatly by Moore's Law, you know, Gordon Moore, one of the founders of Intel, coined Moore's Law many years, almost 40 years ago, in which he said that what he said is the number of transistors in a chip would double every 18 months, but that translates to the power doubling every year and a half. And what he didn't talk about is the costs, but the costs roughly halving at the same time, which is why 15 years later you can get a better video camera for 1/100th of the cost. It's kind of amazing. So you don't need to spend $3,000 on tripods. So what do they want? What do they want? They want a studio for the retirement community to broadcast shows? What do they want to do?
Yeah. Well, so it's been there for 50 years, so they're going from standard def to HD. They only do 90 minutes of actual, you know, content every day. And you know, we're going out to bid, and all of a sudden, for three cameras, it's $57,000 with all the gear that they need. And then another $9,000 for the tripod.
Somebody saw them coming. They don't need anything like that, obviously. So show them twit.tv. That's my podcast network. We're an IPTV station, in effect, an internet distributed television station. And show them the quality. And then you can explain to them that we're doing this with $800 cameras. But by the time you add the converters and the switcher is the most expensive part. Maybe for a studio with six cameras and a switcher, you're spending maybe $10,000, $15,000, at most $20,000. Then you add the lights.
Switcher already. They already have the switcher. So
The switcher might be dated though. So that's the other thing is you have to look at what the switcher inputs are and so forth. If it's right. What we use is SDI, serial digital interface. That's kind of commonly used in this kind of broadcasting.
That's what we have.
Okay,
we have
so that. If you have a switcher that'll do SDI, then what we get is we buy these Canon Vixia cameras. They have HDMI out. And then we buy an $800, probably less now, box from Blackmagic Designs. It takes the HDMI, converts it to SDI, very high quality. The total rigs, and we even have a special, we machined a special holder for it. The total rig is about $1,500 per camera, including tripod.
Including the tripod.
Yeah. Tripods are $80 or $90. Now what they're thinking maybe is you're going to have a camera operator, and then you need a special fluid head, and you need to be able to roll it smoothly, and that can add up. Those can get more fancy. I would submit you'd be better off getting more cameras and having no operators, because humans are expensive, right? And
right.
And so why have an operator? Just have more cameras, and then that way you can – how many cameras can you put in your switcher?
Oh, it's definitely more than three. I think it's 5 to 8.
Yeah, we get 8. I think in our TriCaster. So, but we have more than 8 cameras. So what we do is we also have a router. We use another Blackmagic device. It's a digital router that lets us take 72 inputs, up to 72 cameras and computers and stuff, and output it to 144 different outputs. That's enough. You probably can get one that's smaller than that. But we do because we have 5 sets. So we have, and because it was cheaper, 40 grand, I think, what did we spend on cameras? Something like 40 grand. We bought like 30 cameras. And the idea is now we have cameras everywhere. We don't need a camera operator. We don't need to move the cameras. So they're on kind of stanchions and pylons coming from the ceiling and stuff, because all I have to do is if I want a different shot, I just switch the camera. So that gives me enough shots that I don't have to, you know, have an operator, and that saves them a lot of money. If you go to wiki.twit.tv, that's our, it was designed and is maintained by you, our viewers, but it has an equipment list. I think it's pretty up to date that will tell you what kind of equipment we use. I think for 1/10 of what you've been budgeted, you could buy something that's probably even better. Wiki.twit.tv, it's the Twit Brickhouse equipment. It's right on the front page there. And at least look at that. I think we pretty much document everything we do.
We investigated the Panasonic pan tilt zoom, the kind of...
Yeah, you don't need a PTZ. So those are expensive. We've looked at them. But then you need an operator, just not an operator on the camera. Somebody has to pan tilt. You don't need all that. Just get more cheap cameras, and then you don't need to aim anything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, if you have people that are moving around a lot, then that may be an issue. Like, are they doing – I mean, I guess you have to think about what you're covering. But there's a lot of information, not just from us, but out there on how to do inexpensive television studios. The internet has changed everything. Leo, good luck, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson coming up, our home theater guru.
Hello, Mr. W. How are you?
Hey, good, Mr. L. How are you?
I'm really good. Really good.
Are you guys going to take the cameras that you have to the new studio? Or
yeah,
are you gonna...
why would we buy new ones?
Well, you could go 4K.
Yeah, no. First of all, we're not even 1080p. We're 720. Because that's plenty for people for sitting internet. Here talking.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody
yeah,
wants right. higher bandwidth than that. And this looks fine on a 50-inch screen. I mean, people are watching us on big screens. I guess we could do 1080p. These cameras are capable of it. But that makes the size of the files giant.
You're right. You're right.
So
yeah, absolutely.
I don't think 4K would add any value.
Yeah. Except bragging rights, I suppose.
Bragging rights, yeah. So,
Rusty Bones, I did not feel the earthquake yesterday. There was a pretty big earthquake about 1 in the morning, not last night, but the night before.
Really? I missed it too.
Yeah. It was about, it was in... South Orange County, I think, or North San Diego County. A lot of people felt it here, but I slept right through it. It was 5-point-something.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty strong. But there was was there a damage?
No, not that I heard.
Yeah. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I got some questions I can answer. I got them lined up here. Best Buy selling LG OLEDs with some substantial savings.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Man, I have hovered my finger on that buy button now for 6 months, man. I'm just hovering. If we weren't building a new studio, I probably would buy it, but I'm kind of sinking a lot of money, like $500,000.
Oh, man.
That. So there goes my discretionary funds.
Yeah.
But what is the cost on the B?
The B6, the one I'm recommending, is the lowest cost one. It doesn't have 3D, which you don't care about.
I don't care about that.
It's $1,000 off. At the 55-inch is $3,000.
Wow.
You know? So
wow. I want the big one.
Well, the 65-inch is $5,000. It's still $1,000 off. It's $1,000 off.
Huh.
And yes, that's still expensive, but 65-inch for an 65-inch OLED with HDR...
55 is all. I'd be replacing the OLED in my den, which is 55 now.
Which is 55. So if you replaced it with a 55, you know, you're at $3,000.
But I don't really need to replace it.
It
still looks very good.
I'm sure it looks fantastic.
That's the problem. There's really no call for this.
Nope, afraid not. No. Not in your case.
I keep asking John, come on, do we need an OLED screen for the new studio somewhere? Like in the lobby somewhere, we must need an OLED screen.
Yeah, of course you do. Sure what are you do. Talking about?
John says his house.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's time for Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru, here to talk big screen TVs, surround sound, stereo, high fidelity recordings, and all of that jazz. Scott is editor-in-chief at the AVS Forum, avsforum.com, and also our host on the Home Theater Geeks podcast at twit.tv/HTG. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Leo. Boy, we had a great episode this week on HTG, just to let everybody know. It was John Carafin from Lytro. You know the company Lytro?
Yeah. They're making studio cameras now, right?
Exactly. Yeah. They've moved from the consumer market, where they made a consumer camera that used this light field technology. They're now... gearing up to make a cinema camera called Lytro Cinema for people to use in commercial movies. And boy, oh boy, we had some great video examples of what you can do with a light field camera after the fact. basically it captures light coming into the camera, like any camera does, but it also captures the direction from which all these various light rays came into the camera. And what that does is it gives you extraordinary capabilities after the fact in what's called post-production. You can change the exposure after the fact. You can change the what's called the shutter angle, which is how long the shutter remained open for each frame. You can change the depth of field to physically, optically impossible levels. You can change the frame rate on the fly. I mean, after the fact, as you're going, which leads to tremendous creative capabilities. And we saw some great examples of that on the show. So I recommend it for that alone, just to see those really cool examples of what you can do. And they are being used. They're starting to be used by studios and so on. Of course, he was under NDA and couldn't tell me about any of that yet. By the end of the year, we should see some examples in the field. And by next NAB, that should be a big story. So I'm really excited about it.
You won't, as an end user, know or care, because presumably the director or the editor will choose all those things before they print the film,
sure.
Right?
That's exactly right. But yeah. You will see things that you wouldn't have seen before. And whether or not you're conscious of it, whether or not you look at this movie and you go, oh, wait a minute, they couldn't have possibly have done that, doesn't matter, because you'll just go, wow, how'd they do that?
Yeah.
There'll be some really amazing things.
Like a racked focus, or, I mean, I'm not sure.
Exactly. I said, so does this mean that you don't need a focus puller anymore? This is the guy who stands by the camera and focuses the camera. And he goes, well, you kind of do, but you'll be able to change that after the fact.
Yeah.
To add dramatic impact.
Interesting. Yeah, I hope they don't. That's just be very. You know, they created and tried to sell an expensive consumer camera that didn't. I think it was basically a flop. I rejected it out of hand. I thought this is silly, especially at the cost.
Yeah, it was very expensive. What, $1,200 or something?
Yeah, and it wasn't a particularly good camera. It just had the capability of choosing the focus after the fact, which, you know, most photographers would say, "Well, I'll do that when I'm taking the picture, thank you."
It was
a specialty product, but I think maybe this makes more sense in a cinema camera. We'll see what
video does. For motion picture, it really does make some sense. You can, for example, take a shot of somebody in the parking lot. We showed an example of this. Take a picture of some people in a parking lot, and you can extract them without having to use a green screen, and then put anything you want behind them. So it changes a lot of things about making movies, and so I'm quite excited about it anyway.
Yeah.
I got a letter here from a guy named Cobus Best, who has some KEF speakers.
KEF. And you pronounce that KEF?
You do.
Okay, that's good to know. Yeah. I always said KEF.
Yeah. No. Yeah. You know, it's so weird because companies that have initials for their name, sometimes you say it, that's called an acronym. Sometimes you spell it out, and that's called an initialism. For all you editorial geeks out there,
an initialism.
An initial. So IBM is an initialism.
Yeah, but you don't say IBM.
IBM, no. And CES is an initialism, but CEDIA, the name of another show, CEDIA, is an acronym because you say it as a word.
So when you pronounce an acronym, okay, this is good. Okay, I'm sorry, this is not what we're supposed to be talking about. But
no, that's okay.
I'm always interested in obscure, arcane things like that. An initialism, I'll remember that. Okay, good, thank you.
Yep, exactly. So anyway, KEF. This guy, Cobus, has four KEF speakers and an older Yamaha receiver, an RX V3900. And he's had it kind of in storage for 7 years because he was doing humanitarian work in, I think, Southeast Asia. And he met his wife there, and they've decided, okay, we're going to settle down back in the U.S. And he wants to get a Vizio P series based upon my recommendation, and I still recommend that highly as a TV. And he says, now, will my old setup pair with this Vizio, or do I need to get a sound bar or something else? My answer to him is, no, your speakers are great. They'll work just fine, but you really should get a new AV receiver because the old RX V3900 doesn't have 4K capabilities or HDR capabilities. It's an older receiver. Now, the good news is you can replace it for not very much money. You're really going to do well. If you want to stay with Yamaha, which is a very good brand of AV receiver, I like it very much. You want one, you want a receiver that's going to be able to pass through 4K or UHD signals and HDR signals. And the RX-V381 lists for $300. It's a 5.1 receiver, so it's got five main channels and can do all this pass-through, and it has the HDCP 2.2 copy protection built in, which is what you need. It will support high dynamic range and the wide color gamut that the Vizio P-Series is famous for. And so, you know, it's $300. Now, if you want to go to a 7.1, getting the seven-channel surround, you could step up to the RX V581, which lists for $550. So it's, you know, $250 more. But you get 7.1 channels and maybe a little more power, roughly the same power in both cases. Plenty enough for a home theater system.
Wow.
So, you know, he probably spent more on that RX V3900 7-8 years ago.
Yeah,
than he would on. You mentioned this in the opening. You know,
when
with
is
Moore's
that not
Law.
True? Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Unless you're buying a tube amp,
right?
Or a turntable,
right? Right. As I've always said, digital electronics become cheaper over time,
right.
Cheaper and better,
right.
According to Moore's Law, as you said. Analog electronics remain expensive as for high quality product.
Right. And product, in fact, you know? As fewer people buy them, probably get more expensive, not less.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
There are those
geeks. That's what we call the hipster tax. Actually, credit to Louis C.K. for that term. That's the hipster
that's
tax.
That's very good.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm, very good. Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay. So
good.
There you go.
Well, I'm as we've talked before, I'm ready to pull the trigger on an OLED, but I just can't justify it and I think a lot of people are in this position. My TV looks pretty good still. Well, I didn't buy it that long ago.
No, but you spent what?
Much I spent. It's depressing.
It was the very first one.
It was an early OLED from Samsung.
Samsung. Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I should ask, because that won the shootout. They're doing a new. I got an invite to the new shootouts later this month, isn't it?
That's right. Yep.
I got an invite. I'd like to go, but I can't. Of course, I have to stay here.
June 22nd, 23rd in New York City.
I presume
you'll be. Week.
You'll be covering it, of course.
Oh yeah, we'll be covering it.
They do this every year, and it really is often by many considered to be the definitive rating of the current models of television
of the flagship models.
Yeah. Scott Wilkinson, always a thrill. twit.tv/HTG if you want to listen to that Home Theater Geeks episode. And we'll have more of your calls right after this. Yeah, I was very honored that he invited me to the event.
Oh yeah, Robert Zone, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, I'll check a look at the email. But, it was really, and I felt bad because I would have loved to have gone to the shootout. Are you going to go to it or?
You know, I'm not this year.
Value TV. Yeah, it was Robert Zones that made it. Value Electronics.
Value Electronics.
Yeah.
Yep. My good friend and colleague, Mark Henninger, will be there and he will be reporting on it. I decided this year I needed to cut a couple things out of my schedule because it was just too crowded last year, and particularly since I was actually quite ill last month, it's actually a good thing that I'm not going because it's just a lot of strain. So my friend Mark will be there.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have Mark and the calibrator and Robert Zone, in fact, on my podcast the following Thursday.
Because Robert says I'd love to be on one of Leo's shows. I wonder. Okay, so are doing it. Okay, good.
I am.
Get him on the radio show, or that might be enough to just have him on?
I think it's probably enough.
Okay.
Yeah, he'll be on the podcast with the guy Joel Silver, who's the head of the Imaging Science Foundation,
right.
Who's doing the calibration, some of the calibration, and the. MCing of the show
right.
of the event,
right?
And Mark Henninger. So I'm going to have them all on the show the Thursday after the event, and we're going to talk about the results.
Fantastic!
Yeah, it's going to be great.
What do you think? Who's your money on?
Well, my money's still on OLED.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They're going to have. I think the LG G6, which is the top of the line. You know, the flagship.
So they don't bother with the lower end.
They don't.
Yeah.
They don't. And I have said for some time that I would really like to do another shootout at some other time of the year, maybe, of the kind of midline TVs. You know, because the flagships are very interesting and all, but they're, you know, the most expensive.
Right.
They're going to have the Vizio reference series there. They're going to have the Sony 940. And I forget, several TVs. I think the Hisense. There's going to be a Hisense TV.
Oh, wow.
Believe it or not.
No plasmas, though, probably at this point.
No. No, there are no plasmas anymore. Oh, it's gone. Sad. They're gone.
The plasmas for years won, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
But the OLEDs now have taken over, I guess. And I'm sure there'll be some good LCDs in the mix.
Well, yeah, the Vizio reference series is a very good LCD. The Sony is a very good one. They'll have the KS9800. It's a Samsung flagship. And as I said, Hisense, I think, will be there, which is interesting because first time I think a Chinese manufacturer will be in the shootout.
Wow. Wow.
So, you know, it's going to be pretty cool. Yeah. It's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah. Can't wait. Are you going to stick? You want to stick around for the top? Do you have time?
Yeah, happy to.
Okay,
sure.
Okay, good. I'll let you take it for a minute. You got a minute left, something like that.
Yeah, that's fine. Yes, Creamy Corn Cob, I did calibrate Leo's OLED Samsung. If he got a new one, of course, I'd come up and calibrate that as well. And interesting that there isn't a lot of degradation in the picture quality because early OLEDs, the blues in particular, were prone to kind of pooping out.
What's the time frame on that? When should I start? I wonder if should I measure it looks great to me still, but I don't.
I'm sure
maybe
it is.
Maybe it's 20, is.
You know, I think the last I heard, the blue time lifespan was on the order of 20,000 hours of use.
Oh, well, I think I'm well
within that. So if you don't watch a lot of TV on that, you know, then you're
leave
fine.
Leave it on all day.
Yeah, yeah.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm the tech guy you've been waiting for. 8888, ask Leo. John's next in Monterrey, Mexico. Hello, John.
Hey, Leo.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. Are you an expat in Mexico?
Yes, I am.
How do you like it in Monterrey?
Oh, I love it.
Nice.
Love it.
Yeah, I have a few friends.
Warm. It's not a... Yes?
A few friends, not in Monterrey, but in San Miguel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Been there. Mm-hmm, nice.
Well, what can I do for you today?
I am in a pickle. I have a 2010 MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
And the SD card stopped working on it, you know, a few years ago. Oh. And the Wi-Fi is broken. I have to sit next to my router.
Oh.
And I was waiting until the announcement, but I watched Mac Break, and Renee and Andy says there's not going to be a new MacBook Pro. So I'm going to let you tell me what to do.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I was waiting, too. So Monday is WWDC, Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference. And while it is not, you know, typically Apple will announce new iPhones and new iPads at the end of the year, in the past, when they've announced new Macintoshes, new computers, they've announced it at WWDC. That's a developers conference. Developers tend to want to use computers, not tablets or phones, to write their software. So that's a logical place to do it. Although, I have to say, I don't think Apple has any real requirement to announce new Macs at that event. I also have to point out that Apple's gotten slower and slower about revving their Macs. They just recently did a speed bump on some of the MacBooks. They updated the MacBook itself, the little light one, and I think they did a speed bump on the MacBook Pro. And there were rumors, and I was very excited, that they were going to have a new MacBook Pro on Monday, at least to announce. Even the rumors said, but they won't be available till Q4. And one of the rumors was really interesting, that they were going to replace function keys with OLEDs, keys with OLED screens, little OLEDs that could be changed depending on what you were doing. And given the way people use MacBook Pros for video editing, for photography, for other things, I think that's kind of a neat idea, the idea of programmable function keys that could, depending on the software you're running, say what, you know, different things would be awesome. And, of course, they're overdue for an upgrade to the chip. I mean, Intel has had the Skylake chips out for almost a year now, and Apple has still not adopted Skylake in many of its computers. In fact, by the time they come out, it'll be Kaby Lake, the newer Intel processor.
Uh-huh.
So maybe they're going to skip Skylake entirely. There might be some good reason for that. Even Microsoft has had trouble with power management in the Skylake chips. There are some issues there. Microsoft used the phrase, it's a difficult computer science problem to support Skylake. So maybe Apple's just looking at that going, never. Used to be Apple, when there was a new Intel chip, Apple would be the first to use it. Now, of the last few years, they've been the last to use it. And maybe this year they'll be the never use it. So my answer to you is, well, certainly wait till Monday. You can wait over the weekend, right?
Right,
but
yeah.
But you are due. And if they don't announce anything on Monday, I would go ahead and get one. I'm almost certain Apple will have a new MacBook in the fall. So that's 3 months, 4 months, maybe 5 months from now. But given the problems you're having, I don't – unless that OLED function key really rings your chimes, I wouldn't wait.
No, and it's not my only computer. It's actually my secondary, but I just wanted your opinion. So what would you do?
This is a tough one because you really are – you know, A, it's 6 years old and it's falling apart. So you're really due for a new MacBook. I would, well, certainly wait till Monday, because maybe Ritchie, as good as his sources are, and I, you know, by the way, he's not alone. 9 to 5 Mac also said, we're sorry, we don't think there'll be new hardware at WWDC. But even in their leak, it said not available till fourth quarter. So I'm guessing there will be new hardware in the fourth quarter. Boy, if they didn't, that would be very strange. My larger question is, how committed is Apple to the desktop platform? You know, and I feel like their attention is wavering. They don't, you know, the Mac Pro that they put out in 2013 hasn't been updated at all, not even a chip bump. And frankly, everybody I know who has a Mac Pro, not everybody, but many, including myself, have had kind of endless problems with the Mac Pro. I can't imagine they're selling any of them at this point. And apparently they don't seem to care. They've given up on that audience. You know, the iPhone sells so well for them that I can understand when a company's making a bank on a particular product line that they're going to put most of their energy in that. That having been said, they've got a lot of money and a lot of staff. There's no reason why they shouldn't. I'll tell you what I did. I decided, because I have a 2012 MacBook, I decided to update it with a Linux computer that has Skylake and Thunderbolt and, you know, the latest features. Because NVIDIA GeForce 980 card and things like that, because I wanted.
And what operating system are you using on that?
I'm using Ubuntu Linux, believe it or not.
Okay.
I have to say the Linux desktop has gotten pretty close to the Mac desktop. The only thing missing are some key pro apps like the Adobe apps. If Adobe decided to do Linux versions of Lightroom and Premiere, man, I'd say without hesitation the time has come to shift, because the good news about Linux is, because it's really sustained and supported by enthusiasts, not by any one company, it's under constant improvement and development. Mm-hmm. And at some point, Apple, it seems to me, is drifting away from Mac OS X. I don't even consider Windows 10 anymore. People, I think, often think that there's new versions of Windows out every 5 years. No. That's the same version of Windows going. In fact, you know, because they just had a security patch that affected all versions of Windows going back to Windows 2000, including Windows 10. Essentially, they're just putting a new skin on old stuff. And I feel for Microsoft. They need to start from scratch, but they're not going to, because they have such a good business with legacy software. So Windows 10, if you're in business, of course, makes a lot of sense, but not for me. And I'm starting to think OS 10 is going the same direction. And the good news is Linux is being actively developed. That's not much help to you. You want a new MacBook. I'd say see what happens Monday. If nothing big happens Monday, I don't think you should go another 4 or 5 months with that old beat-up junker.
I agree with you.
I think I would get a new one. I think I'd get a new one. Those Mac, they're not going to change the design. They're going to have some new features. I doubt there'll be a massive refresh.
Well, then I can wait a couple years if they come out with something.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No laptop. You really should consider a laptop to be a 3, 4, 5 year purchase, not more. They just get beat up more because they're small. They get thrown around. And because they're so tightly packed, they don't wear as well. You're already seeing, you know, a desktop, you would be kind of surprised if after 6 years, things like the SD card reader and the Wi-Fi died. You'd be, go, what's going on here?
Yeah.
But on a laptop, it's because of the heat and the how tightly packed they are and because they get beat up a little more, that's not unusual. Laptops just don't last that long. So you got a good 6 years out of it. I think it's time to kind of look. And if you, and you'll notice big speed bumps. You'll notice and one of the biggest bumps, Apple has moved to very high-speed solid-state disks instead of the spinning disks in their laptops. That reduces heat, increases speed dramatically. And makes the battery life better. So I think that's a huge improvement. So
yeah, I upgraded my hard drive to SSD about a year ago, and I noticed.
It's remarkable, yeah. And, and they're even better now because they're using the PCI Express bus for these SSDs. So they're really, really fast.
Okay.
Yeah. That makes more of a difference than almost anything. The processor speeds have not been increasing much, right? I can understand why Apple wouldn't feel overly compelled to go to the new Skylake processor. The problems it introduces outweigh, I think, the benefits. It's not much faster. It's not much better battery life. It's really a single-digit percentage. So why bother? I don't understand why Apple's doing that. There's not a lot of compelling reason to update for that reason.
Yeah.
That's probably why they're looking at OLED's keys. They got to figure out something to make you want a new one. This is the big challenge in all of technology.
Want a new one.
PC sales have plummeted over the last year because everything you bought in the last 5 years is just is plenty fast enough. You know, it's all small improvements at this point. So I say save your money. Wait and see what happens Monday. We could all be wrong. They could have some amazing new thing on Monday. If they don't, go out and buy a new MacBook.
Okay, thank you, Leo.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. I was very disappointed they didn't rev the MacBook, the super thin and light. This year could have there's some improvements they could have made, adding a second port. It only has one port on it, one type C port, and that's it. Adding a second port would have been nice. Maybe getting the Skylake processor in there would have been nice. I was very disappointed. Thunderbolt 3. Actually, they did put the Skylake, but they didn't put Thunderbolt 3 in. Apple seems to have, their attention seems to have drifted for some reason. And I hope your attention hasn't drifted. We're going to take a break for news. Stay tuned. Lots more to come. I'm Scott Wilkinson. You have, my friend, plenty of time to take off.
Thank you very much.
Spread your wings.
And fly.
And fly.
Fly.
They haven't given me the shot. Oh, yes, they have. Let me just adjust this.
Okay.
So I need to give you, put you in there. Put this.
Okay. Marsworm was asking me about TV stands and stuff, and he's seen some with fake fireplaces in the center and some with electric fireplaces.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
And I say, no, don't do it. You'll kill yourself. It's really not a good idea. I mean, so many people make this mistake, and I think it's so sad to put their TV over their fireplace. I rail against this all the time because it's really not a good idea. Not for the reason you might think. Most people would go, oh, yeah, it'll get hot. Well, no. If it gets hot, then you got something seriously wrong with your fireplace. It had better be highly insulated and so that the wall of the flue does not get hot. If it does, you got bigger problems than a hot TV. You got possibly your house burning down. So that's not a problem, presumably. What is a problem is the position of the TV. So usually the TV, you put the TV over the fireplace, it'll be up there and you'll be watching TV like this, craning your neck. And that, you watch a 2-hour movie like that, you're going to need the chiropractor, no doubt about it. And so some people make what are called articulating mounts, right? So that the TV might actually, angle down so that you're watching it. It's sort of more angled at you, but it's still too high. You're still looking up. Now, there's a couple companies, I can't recall the names offhand, but they actually make a mount that brings the TV out and then lowers it down in front of the fireplace. Now, if you actually have a fire going and you've got a radiator on the fireplace, then the TV might get kind of hot at that point. But you wouldn't want a fire going when you're watching a TV anyway, because it would really screw up your perception, your visual perception. So you don't have a presumably you don't have a fire going in the fireplace. You bring this TV down, motorized, and bring it to the right height, then sure, I have no problem with that. But those mounts aren't cheap. I can't recall really what they are, but they're, you know, not cheap, I'm sure. So don't put your TV over the fireplace if you can help it. Some people say, well, I don't have any place else to put it. Are you sure? Be really, really sure that you don't have any place else to put that TV, because that's really not a good idea. And if you have a, you know, TV mount or stand that's kind of a fake fireplace or an electric fireplace, probably the TV is going to be up at that height. I don't know for sure, but if it is, run screaming from that solution. That is not a good solution. You want the TV down at eye level. You want your eye, you're seated, when you're seated in your seat where you're going to be watching TV, you want your eye to be about level with the center of the screen. That's what you want in order for the best, to have the best visual experience. This is what I do at home. This is what I do when I go out to the theater. I find the seat where my eye is about the middle of the screen, vertically speaking, which is why at the Dolby Cinema at AMC, I sit in row G, because that's the row. Well, there's two reasons for it. One is that that's the row that gets me to that right height. Gets me the right distance from the screen. So that's reason number two. Reason number three is that the side speakers, the surround speakers, are all towed. And what that means is that they're all angled, and the front ones are angled pointing backwards. And slowly, as you go back through the auditorium, that toe angle becomes less and less and less until at row G, there is no toe angle. The speakers are firing straight in to the into that aisle, into that row. And then the speakers behind that, they start towing the opposite direction. So everything is pointed at row G, speaker-wise, which is the third reason that I choose row G. And the good news about Dolby Cinema is that you can get assigned seats. So you buy your tickets, you pick your seat, and, you know, you don't have to wait in line. For a big blockbuster, of course, now a big blockbuster, they'll sell tickets very quickly, and you probably won't get the seat you want unless you're really Johnny on the spot, so to speak. But anyway, that's my rant about positioning. Let's see here. Compter says the Costco sells the LG EF9500, which is an OLED, last year's OLED. I believe it can be updated with a firmware update to HDR. Now, whether that's Dolby Vision or HDR10, I'd have to do some research. I don't remember. The really cool thing about this year's LG OLEDs is that they do both Dolby Vision, HDR, and HDR10. And the importance of that is when you're streaming HDR from, say, Vudu or Netflix, generally speaking, that's going to be in Dolby Vision. If you have HDR10 from an Ultra HD Blu-ray, that's going to be HDR10. So in order to be able to enjoy both of them, you need a TV that can do both of them. And so that's why I recommend the LG OLED and the, let's see, Samsung will not do Dolby Vision. Sony will not do Dolby Vision. The Vizio P series does Dolby Vision at the moment, and they promise an firmware upgrade to HDR10. So assuming that they keep that promise, that is a big advantage for Vizio P series, no question about it. And the reference series, too, although that's so much more expensive, I say get the P series by all means. Tech William is thinking of waiting till Black Friday season. What company do you think will have good LCD for $500 to $800, say, is 60 inches, or is it too early to tell? Well, it's kind of too early to tell. TCL is a possibility. Their X1 is coming out this summer, and they're going to be aggressively priced. So is Hisense. Their H8, I think, or H10. I think it's the H10 in the shootout. That's going to be very aggressively priced as well. So that would be, those would be good possibilities. User 2840 says, why does my 55-inch Samsung look so bad with a 60 refresh rate? That's a good question. I'm not quite sure. With 60 with a 60 hertz frame rate or refresh rate, probably can't do motion interpolation, frame interpolation. You need 120 to do that. You might try backlight scanning. Backlight scanning, I think it's called on the Samsung. It's not Auto Motion Plus. It's, well, I don't know which Samsung you have. So I would say, though, if you can enable backlight scanning, that would probably help. Whoa.
Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. See you next week.
See you next week. Our show today brought to you by Atlassian. If you are on a team, if you're a developer, if you work with developers or people who are working on big projects, you probably have heard of Atlassian. Certainly anybody who does agile development is very familiar with Atlassian. We use Jira all the time to work with teams. For instance, the team that designed our website, that's where I first experienced agile development, and Jira. Our app development team uses Jira too. It's a way for us to keep in touch with them, fill in bug reports, let them get stuff done, prioritize what we're doing. They also have a program called Confluence. We use Confluence here as well for our help tickets, things like that. Create, share, organize results, share content, bring team members up to speed with Confluence. HipChat, we're all in on HipChat. That's their messaging app. Works everywhere. You can instant message or video chat your team. You can integrate things like, you know, Redis and Panopta and any kind of additional tools you use. We use HipChat for everything, including the design of the new studio. And then, of course, if you're coding, you can test, review, and manage code in real time with Bitbucket. Atlassian is the king of this. You know that. And I want you to try it right now by going to Atlassian.com and trying it for free. We love our Atlassian programs. Our engineering team uses Confluence to document equipment and work processes. We use Jira for managing our third-party vendors and organizing our constantly growing pile of tasks. Otherwise, this would be overwhelming, but these tools really make it doable. From everything from planning events to working on serious operational issues, we tie all of the communications together, of course, with HipChat. I've got HipChat running on everything, my phone, my tablet. I even have HipChat running on my Linux boxes because I need to keep up with what's going on. I think I love it, and I think you will too. So give it a try at Atlassian.com. See how Jira, Confluence, HipChat, and Bitbucket give your team everything you need to organize, discuss, and complete shared work. Atlassian, helping teams everywhere team up to create what's next. Atlassian.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. Anything on your mind, if it's got a chip in it, I like to talk about it. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO. Website, which I didn't mention all last hour, but I should because it's where we put everything. It's the repository of all knowledge, techguylabs.com. So if I mention something or I tell you about a site, or it's all there. James DeRuvo's writing as we speak. Tip, tip, tap, tap, tap. Typing it all in. And then later we add audio and video from every show so you can go back if you miss a show and listen or watch. We also will put in more detail from the question and answer and your comments. Or you can put comments on any. We divide the page out, the show out by the website. There you go. That's the phrase. The website into show by show and then each show by hour, one, two, or three, and then each hour by caller in that hour. So should be pretty easy to find the call that you're interested in and add your thoughts. So no need to shout at the radio anymore. You can shout at me on the webpage, techguylabs.com. Earl, Granada Hills, California. Hi, Earl. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, hi there, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm well.
Good to hear it. Okay, I did a very rookie mistake the other day and deleted a file which had all of my vacation pictures in it.
Oh, no!
My Samsung phone. Yes, I know. Oh, are you mad at me?
No, I'm not mad at all. I'm sad. I'm echoing what you must have said when you realized what you did. Oh.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's what I said.
Yeah.
Anyway, but you know what? I have to get over it, and either I stay mad or I just decide on going back on to all those vacations again.
There you go. Just an excuse to go travel. So you didn't. Now, first thing I always tell everybody, Android or iPhone, is put a program on there that backs up your photos. And there are a lot of them that do this.
Yeah.
Google has a great Photos app that is free to back. And there's a setting in it that says, when I take a picture, upload it. You can say, if I don't want to do it over cellular because it costs, just wait till I get to Wi-Fi, but then upload it. And Google will store that forever. It also does a lot of really smart machine learning classification stuff that is getting more and more sophisticated. But it's not just Google. I think Microsoft stopped doing that. Dropbox will do it. You have to pay for storage for Dropbox. Google gives you a little more for free. Flickr will do it up to a terabyte for free. If you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, Amazon will do it. And it's fine to have a couple of these. So for future reference, put one of these on your phone.
Okay.
It's also handy because now when I take a picture on my phone, I don't have to transfer it over or anything. I just go to photos.google.com and there's all my pictures.
Yeah. Okay.
Next time.
So
there are undeleter programs for Android.
Oh.
So Android is just like any other, it's actually Linux under the hood, and like any other computer operating system. Nowadays, they don't delete files. When you delete a file, they don't actually scrub the data. They just release it for reuse. Okay. So you have to be careful because any subsequent use of that drive, that storage on the phone, could overwrite part of the photo because that's been released. But if you go, oh, gosh, I just deleted something, and you stop right there, there are undeleter programs out there. And I don't actually have any experience with any of them. So I don't have one to recommend, but there are, if you Google undelete Android, there are tons of them. There's even some that actually go on the phone. I wouldn't recommend that because, again, anything you do to the phone's storage now potentially will overwrite a photo or two. So if you download a program to undelete, you may be deleting some photos permanently by doing that. You definitely, so there are a number of, there's an article I'll put up in the show notes. On Android Pit, which is a terrible name for a website, but how to get
Android
PIT. I don't know why.
Really?
Yeah, that's AndroidPit.com. But you could just Google how to recover lost data on Android, and you'll see. And some of the data recovery tools require that you have a rooted phone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know where you come from, that means something different. So I'm just going to say a phone where you have super user permissions.
Yeah.
Yes. So if you've rooted your phone, but you have more capabilities because then you have access to everything. But there are also tools that will work if you're not, like Recova. If you had the best news on all this would be if you have set your camera. Do you have an SD card in your phone? And if you do, have you set your camera to save files to the SD card?
No, I haven't got an SD card in there.
So that would be the best case scenario because then you could pop the SD card out and use desktop tools to recover it. And that would almost certainly guarantee recovery. But you could still hook up your phone with a USB cable to a desktop and run these recovery tools. It will look like you've mounted a folder on your computer. It's via USB. Have you ever hooked up your phone to your computer before?
Well, you know, it's interesting you should say that because I did go online to check out a couple of these recovery programs, and I've forgotten the name of this one, but when I put the USB cable in, it didn't recognize my phone. Now, when I was online on YouTube and picked this thing up, the guy did say that it didn't work on his laptop, but it worked on his desktop. Well, I haven't got a desktop anymore.
No, it should work. That's not a case of laptop versus desktop. That's a case of the right drivers. Are you on Windows or Mac?
Windows.
Okay. So there, you do have to, and at some point, someone's going to have to describe to you the way to do this. When you plug in your phone on Windows, on Mac you have to have Android File Transfer, an additional program. On Windows you don't. You plug in your phone, you'll have to go to the settings on your phone, and you'll see USB device connected. And there are two ways you can look at the phone. One is as a camera, and that's photo transfer mode. You don't want that. You want mass storage transfer. So I think it's and so you just choose mass storage, and then it will look like a hard drive. At that point, you can run recovery tools on it.
Okay.
So with a little effort, you probably, if you haven't, did you delete it, like, recently?
Well, it was about 3 days ago. It was this week, yeah.
Yeah, everything you're doing on the phone is potentially saving stuff on top of those old photos. So you want to, like, not do anything more until you start recovering stuff.
Yeah.
And for future, just, you know, back up, because it's easy on an Android device to do that, or an iPhone. There are lots of free tools that'll do it, and then you never lose photos. Plus, you have the advantage of you can look at your photos on your laptop, and you can save them, you can edit them, you can send them to friends. Oh, you have a little one there? I hope you didn't lose pictures of the baby.
Actually, no, it's my grandson.
Oh, your grandson, even worse.
No, but I didn't lose any pictures of him.
Good.
Just
travels.
He was in a completely different file, which I'm glad we did that.
Thank goodness. So it was just those travel photos. All right.
Yeah, this was just a vacation photo.
And they were in a specific folder. That's good news. That's likely to be able to recover. You're likely. So you know what? I'm going to ask the chat room. I'm going to ask people who are listening. Give us some suggestions if you've used recovery tools on Android. Which one works best for you? A lot of these tools nowadays, what they do is it's free to see what they can recover. And then, and it's just a tease. They say, well, I see these. Would you like me to recover them? That'll be $50. And I find that really offensive. Because the same amount of work is involved in just seeing them and recovering them. And there's some even that lie. That say, I see 350 photos. Would you like to recover? And then you pay $50 and it says, well, here's four. That's really really uncool. Uncool, man. So, but I'm sure there are tools that don't. Recuva, R-E-C-U-V-A, is a totally free tool that does this. There are plenty of free recovery tools. The key is being able to see what's on that drive in a way that you can undelete files. 8888, ask Leo. If you've got a suggestion, I'd love to hear from you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He sounds like he was from down under. Where I understand if you say, I'm rooting my phone, it means a completely different thing. Yeah. All right. It's checking. That's why we call them routers. You call them rooters. I thought, well, that's strange. You should call them a router. There you go. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Talking high tech. As I mentioned, techguylabs.com, our website, very useful if you want to follow along as you listen to the show. Gary is in Springfield, New Jersey. Hi, Gary. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, hello, Leo.
Hello, Gary.
How are you?
I am well. How are you?
While on hold, very informative and just a great show. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, sometimes the stuff on hold is more interesting than the stuff on the air. At least I'm often more forthcoming.
Yeah, I can hear the sidebar.
It's a sidebar, exactly.
So the reason for my call is I have a 5S, and the 7, I guess, is rumored to be coming out in the fall. I definitely need to do an upgrade as I'm pushing all my space. I do have a tendency as maybe...
How big was the iPhone 5S that you bought?
It's showing right now... my capacity at 26.4.
All right, so you probably got a 32 gig.
32, right?
Yeah. Maybe you
and
got
I
a 64.
A lot of pictures.
Yeah, 32 is pretty. 32 is kind of the minimum. It makes me mad that Apple has been selling these 16 gig and even for a while 18 gig iPhones, because that really wasn't a good choice for most people. It gave them the opportunity to say, as starting at, you know, $600 instead of the actual real cost if you bought one with enough storage. But 32's for most people, 32 is good. 64 would be even a little bit better.
Right. Yeah, I'm probably...
Are you running out of room?
I'm running out of room as I have, round numbers, 3,000 photos and 300 videos on it.
Yeah, so the first thing I would say is turn on Apple's cloud storage for photos. Because that will automatically move stuff to the iCloud. You might need to buy more storage. but it's not that expensive. I pay $2 a month for 200 gigabytes, which should be enough.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
And then you get your backup, and you also have all your photos there. It gives you, it keeps copies of the originals, the full-size originals of everything. And then what it does is, and this is Apple's solution for people. There are a lot of people like you who are filled up their iPhones. And I've talked to people who said, it's time for me to buy. I think maybe this is what you're saying. Time for me to buy a new iPhone. I've filled the old one up. I don't want, that's not a good solution.
Right, right. My tires are wearing out. I got to get a new
car. Yeah, exactly. Precisely. You know, the trunk is awfully full on this car. Maybe I better buy a new one. What I would suggest is if you turn on the iCloud Photo Library, what it will do is move everything to your iCloud. You keep originals. They're backed up, by the way, so you don't have our previous caller's scary issue of accidentally deleting it. And they replace what's on your phone with smaller versions. They manage your phone storage so that you don't ever run out of space.
Right. So, Leo, if I've been running at iCloud, I might be just not doing
it's a separate
the level
setting
that you're describing.
It's a separate setting. So you've got iCloud already, and maybe you're doing backups to iCloud, which would be great. But you have to go into the photo settings and turn on the iCloud Photo Library.
iCloud Photo Library.
That's a separate thing, and it probably is not in Photos. It's probably in the settings.
Got it.
They call it, yes, it's in the settings. So you go to settings and then photos and camera in the settings. And the very topmost setting is iCloud Photo Library. If you turn that on, it says automatically upload and store your entire library in iCloud to access photos and videos from all your devices. And what it will do is it will save smaller versions, screen size appropriate versions on your iPhone.
Right.
And that is Apple's, you know, you don't have to know anything solution to your conundrum, which is I've run out of room because I use this as my camera and I take pictures all the time.
So when I've done that, do I actually do a delete mode on my phone?
Nope, don't have to.
Oh, you don't?
Don't do anything.
It basically washes them away, kind of.
Well, yeah. After it uploads them. It does it in an intelligent way. It'll upload all the originals.
Right.
And then keep small compressed versions for your use on the phone.
Got it. Oh, I see. So if I want to show a picture to someone,
yeah,
I
it's still there.
Have it
yeah.
on.
And it's
right.
appropriate for the F5S screen.
Right.
So you're storing much larger versions. They'll cut those images are, I don't know, 2 or 3 or 4 megabytes. I can't remember. They're actually maybe even bigger. They'll cut those down to a few hundred kilobytes.
Got it.
So you by doing that, you should release a lot of storage. Videos even worse.
Could you just walk me through those steps again?
Yep. You go to settings.
Right.
Photos and cameras.
Photos and cameras.
At the very top of the listing there, it'll say iCloud Photo Library. I would guess that's turned off at this point. Turn it on.
Right.
It will at some point say, hey, you're out of room. You need to buy some more storage. And it gives you the way to do that right inside the iPhone. As I said, 200 gigabytes should be plenty for almost anybody.
Yeah.
And that's $2 a month. I think it's worth it.
Yeah, fantastic.
Okay.
Nice job.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening. We are brought to you today by another great solution for backup for your computer. It's kind of the same idea. Easy. You don't have to think about it. But it just gets the job done. I'm talking Carbonite Online Backup. And this is the beauty part. It's automatic continuous storage in the cloud. So just like what we were talking about, your data is no longer, you don't have to worry about your computer. You don't have to worry about hard drive failure. It is still on your computer, obviously, but it's no longer at risk because it's in the cloud, and you can always get to it anytime. In fact, you can log on to any computer, see your stuff, which I recommend. Make sure it's there. Or use their free apps on the phone, and it just peace of mind. You go, oh, man, I love this. If you're using Windows and ransomware is an issue, and it really, really is, you should know Carbonite protects you against ransomware as well. Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Leo. You can try it free. You don't need a credit card. They have home, office, business, server, all different plans, but they have free trials on all of them. And if you use my name Leo in the free trial, you get 2 months free when you buy. So that's a significant discount. In the case of ransomware, you restore a clean set of data from your Carbonite backup and you're good to go. No wonder more than 1.5 million customers use Carbonite. to back up their most precious resource, their data. Last couple of calls, you've heard people lose their data because they don't back up. Don't you be that person. Carbonite.com, use my name Leo for 2 months free with purchase. You got to back it up to get it back. Do it right with Carbonite. Noah, Santa Barbara. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Noah.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome. What can I do for you?
Good. Well, I'm one of these early adopters that's excited about Type-C, yet at the same time confused, given that especially the cards Apple's kind of put on the table here.
Apple is not going to go to Type-C. You know why? They just switched to Lightning. And they made everybody buy new cables. And if they go to Type-C on their phones anyway or tablets, they're going to make everybody nuts. So they did do Type-C on the MacBook, which I think is great. And I hope all future notebook computers will use Type-C adapters. It's a much better way to power a notebook. It's much more flexible. But I don't see it happening on the phones or tablets because they've got something that's every bit as good as Type-C. And they already made everybody buy new cables. Lightning. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm sorry, I ran out of time there. So I kind of interrupted you. Go ahead.
No. The question becomes, we have the headphones as well. Android, the latest ones, just announced that they're going with Type-C headphones.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have Lightning headphones as well.
Yeah.
So the question is, is Apple going to put a Lightning port out on their computer so you can use your same headphones with your iPhone as well with the computer? Or what's the play there? Because
that's an interesting question. Why wouldn't they, right? But I don't see them doing that, no. That's actually, why hasn't Apple put Lightning on its computers? Why did they use Type-C on the MacBook and not Lightning? You got me.
Yeah, and then another thing is, on the other end of it, the USB-A, that'll likely be going to Type-C, my guess would be. And just trying to kind of digest what's going on there. I know
Type-C is the future. Type-C is the future everywhere but in Apple land.
Right.
And this is, I'm sorry to say, this is where I'm very unhappy with Apple, but Apple is moving more and more in a proprietary direction while the rest of the world's moving the other way. And I think that's a good measure of it. Why do they put Type-C on the MacBook? Well, I think the MacBook was kind of a outlier. It was an experiment.
And then what they've done is they've gotten rid of the MagSafe connector, which is one of their really cool proprietary things that they did. So I wonder if they'll be bringing that back.
I would guess that you will not see more Type-C stuff from Apple. I think that was an aberration. I would guess that they're going to stick with MagSafe and Lightning.
MagSafe and Lightning.
Yep.
Got it.
Yep, because Apple doesn't feel the need to follow other companies in any direction at all.
And I think the Joker kind of card they've played, so to speak, is they launched with this Type-C. So while at the same time they're staying proprietary, they're kind of ushering the future technology forward as one of the first people to do it.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Now, I bought an HP laptop with a Type-C connector. I was all excited. It actually has three. It's MacBook-like. It has three. And HP did a very Apple-y thing. You can't charge it with any Type-C charger. You can only use HP's charger, which completely eliminates the advantage of Type-C.
I feel like we've gone 10 years forward and 10 years backwards at the same time, the early thousands.
It's why I'm increasingly in favor of open systems and open operating systems and open hardware. I think that ultimately that is the future. And companies that go down this proprietary road will, in the short term, make more money because you have to buy a special adapter just from Apple. But it's not good it's not good for consumers.
And then one other curveball is with Type-C, you supposedly have both power going in and out.
Yes.
Which is obviously exciting to eliminate.
I can charge my phone from my laptop.
Cables. But the question is, let's say you have two battery packs and one of them's low and you want to charge that one from the other one that's fuller and they're both Type-C and you plug them into each other. Where's the interface? Are battery packs going to need interfaces to tell which way the power is
that's
going.
A, probably a go from the source to the sink, but that's a really interesting question. I do not know. I'm sure it's in the spec, but it probably goes – that's a very interesting question. I would guess it's the same thing with my laptop. If I plug a phone into it, it's going to say, well, who has the most power? It's going to go from the source to the sink. Who has the most power? Well, we'll even them out. But I don't know. You know what? I bet that's in the spec. I'll have to look and see. It's a good question.
Okay, well, hey, I didn't mean to throw too many curveballs.
No, I love it. You're raising all the right questions. And I may be wrong about Apple. God knows I'm wrong all the time about Apple. They're very unpredictable. But my guess is...
I will give you that one.
Yeah.
They are a hard, hard one to read there.
Yeah. Thanks, Noah. I got to run.
Take care.
Bye-bye. There he is, Johnny Jett, our world traveler. He is not home, I can tell. And Johnny, I'm going to take a guess. No, I'm going to guess just from your shirt.
How about from my window?
Oh, I was going to say the UK because you have a 3 on your shirt, but now it looks like you're in Old Sturbridge Village or Williamsburg. I don't know. Where are you? You're in Norway.
I'm in Alaska.
Alaska? I don't know, but Alaska. What are you doing in Alaska? Where in Alaska are you?
I'm in Anchorage right now. I'm actually sitting at a hotel that's by the airport, the world's largest float plane airport.
Oh, fun. Are you going into the outback up there? Where are you going?
I'm actually about to go hiking in a little bit, so I'm checking out of this hotel, which is a lakefront hotel.
Fun.
And about to go out for a little hike. We're only up here for a few days. The airfares were so cheap from L.A., I couldn't pass it up. It was $220 a round trip.
I love Alaska. It's beautiful, beautiful state. And I went on, a cruise. I'm sure you've been on Alaska cruises before.
I've actually never been on an Alaska cruise.
Really? The nice thing about the cruises is you can go up to the glaciers and get fairly close to them. And you can go to areas that are fairly remote in Alaska. It's really fun. But I've been to Anchorage because of it and Ketchikan. And it's cool. Oh, it's a beautiful.
And it's a great time to come up. Last night we took off from LAX at 7:30. And the whole flight. You know, the 4 hours and 43 minutes, it was the sun was setting. It was surreal. It was just like the longest sunset of your life. And it was just amazing. I've never seen the sky like that.
I saw your tweet. You said, I'm going somewhere where the sun doesn't set till 11 p.m. And I thought, where is he going to the Arctic Circle?
I've been in the Arctic Circle in Norway and Iceland and stuff like that.
It's wild,
beautiful.
Isn't it?
But Alaska's so close. It's easy. You don't need a passport. And the flights have been cheap up here.
That's
so
awesome.
You know, definitely check it
Summer's
out.
Summer's the time to go, for sure.
Without a doubt. And speaking of Alaska, I just had breakfast with one of my buddies. He's called Mr. Alaska, the Alaska's travel expert. And he has a thing that's great if you come up here with more than one person called the Alaska Tour Saver. So if you go to toursaver.com, you will see all these deals that they offer, 2-for-1 deals. And they have an app. It's $100 for the book, the coupon book or the app.
Wow.
Which is steep until you think about if you do one kind of adventure thing or even do like the railroad, which costs $400, you get 2-for-1.
Yeah, an excursion is expensive, so yeah.
They are. You can do everything from helicopter rides or zip lining, but the 2-for-1 deals are really good, and you can only use a coupon once on the app as well, so make sure you use it wisely, but... You know, if you come up here, it's definitely worth it just for to get it. And I'm
Alaska
a fan of it.
Tour Saver, which is at toursaver.com. Cool.
Yes. And then I got since we're talking about hiking and out in the parks, I'm going out in the woods, I might as well give you a website called findyourpark.com.
Hmm.
So this one was actually created by the U.S. National Park Service because this is their 100th anniversary.
Oh, wow.
So if you go to find, then you can type in whatever state you want or type in a park, and it will give you all kinds of information. There's all kinds of events going on this year in all the national parks because of the anniversary.
The national parks in the U.S. are such a great resource. And if you haven't taken advantage of this, do. Just Yosemite alone look how many national parks there are. Hundreds.
Yeah. Do you know I'd never been to Yosemite?
What?
Yeah.
Have you been now?
No.
What? All right. Well, I'm taking you and Natalie to Yosemite.
I would love to. So, last year was my first time ever to Yellowstone.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
And I was like, this is one of the most amazing places ever been on Earth.
Yeah.
The thing is, you really want to go to these national parks when there's not hordes of tourists. And, you know, it's a coming up to that time of year when there are going to be packed, especially they've done such an amazing job this year talking about their 100th anniversary. So I recommend either going right now before the mad rush when all the kids get out of school or right after.
We took the kids to Grand Teton a few years
that
ago.
It's jaw-dropping, jaw-dropping.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's breathtaking. It really is. Yeah. But this website will definitely give you some good ideas, and it'll also, you know, whatever park you choose, it will actually point you right to their website, which is usually, you know, the nps.gov and slash whatever the park is. But it will tell you everything you need to know, and you know, everything from Acadia to Zion National Park.
Nice, really nice. And I go to our state parks all the time as well. We have a beautiful state park here in Petaluma, and Lisa and I hike there all the time. We live in a beautiful country, and one of the ways to see it is not just go to the cities, but go to the parks.
You definitely want to get out and go to the, and go hiking and go to the parks. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Johnny Jett, are you going to go climb Denali?
I'm not going to Denali. I'm going to I'm going to a smaller one. But Natalie's never been up here before, so you know she's pregnant. So I was like, you know what, this is the time to go. I have buddies from college up here, and
how fun. And is the weather nice? I mean, it's not cold, right?
It's actually not very nice right now.
It's cool.
I looked at the 10-day weather forecast. The 2 days we're here is rain and chilly. The next day after we leave, it's going to be like 70 and sunny.
Well, you're in Alaska. What do you want? You're practically the North Pole.
But by the way, I got a tip for you guys.
Can you see Russia from your hotel window?
Yeah, oh, my God. There it is.
Okay, tip.
All right, tip. So I was in Colorado last week. And so if you're ever going to a high altitude, you know, I was up in Snowmass, which is 8,000 feet.
Wow.
It's difficult to sleep. So, you know, almost every hotel has humidifiers. So ask for one.
Yeah.
And I was telling all my buddies who were on this trip, I said, listen, actually, our hotel even had it in the room. So I said, just ask for a humidifier.
That is a really good idea, though. If you go to Vegas, where you also need it because it's the desert.
Without a doubt. That's a good one.
The hotels, at least in my experience, often say, oh, we just gave out the last one.
You know, I've never asked for one in Vegas, but that's such a great idea because every time I wake up in Vegas, I can't even open my mouth. It's just stuck together.
So you know what I bought? I bought a battery-powered humidifier. You put it on a bottle of water.
Oh,
it goes
in
the bottle of water, and then
what's that called?
Well, Satechi makes one. It's called their USB portable humidifier. This one goes off your USB port.
I love this.
And then you put it in a bottle of water, so you can. It's small, which is nice, so you can bring it with you as you travel. And so I have a portable humidifier I carry with me everywhere. It's
God.
As good as like a. You know, the real humidifier.
Yeah, but still.
But it helps.
In Vegas?
It helps. And the dry air really will.
Or New Mexico or Palm Springs.
I lose my voice. I get Vegas throat. I can't talk.
Oh, well, I'm going to make that my product of the week in my newsletter.
Get one and see if it works before you
I will
take my word.
I trust your.
These are great. So Techie makes one and it just goes under the water bottle and it screws in.
And now, how much does it cost?
$20.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
But
the best part is it's powered by your USB port, so you plug it into your computer, and you're done. Here's another one. Here, this is better. This is $25. This is one my studio manager, uses. The Bell & Howell Ultrasonic Personal Portable Humidifier lasts 12 hours. This one, you put the water bottle upside down into it, so it's going to use the whole water bottle up. It's only
Bell and Howell?
Bell and Howell. Remember them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I don't remember these guys.
You don't know the name Bell and Howell?
I don't remember.
I don't think
them.
It's the same Bell and Howell because they used to make projectors.
Okay.
You know, this is one of the problems with American brand names now. A lot of these brand names have been purchased by Chinese companies and others who don't want, you know, that you're not going to go buy the Ching Chang Ha ultrasonic personal portable water humidifier, so they're going to make it American name, and you go, oh yeah, I love Bell and Howell. There you go, $25. We'll put a link in the show notes. Thank you, Johnny. JohnnyJett.com. So, do you use this?
Yeah.
Nice.
It really cranks out the
And it gives you enough vapor so you really feel like you're humidified. Yeah. I might have to get one of these because, yeah.
It's kind of light. Right under the dial there.
Oh, it glows blue.
It's really cool. You see the water.
Yeah, it lights up the water, but it also lights up the room,
it's
right?
It's very bright.
Yeah.
So I just put something in front of it.
Oh, it's got UV germicidal protection. That's kind of cool. Yeah, you just put it, you know, put it.
Yeah. And if the top comes off, so you hold your bottle right upright, and you know, you screw the top on, and then it's got a little ball float. So you can turn it upside down without it...
Without dribbling out. Yeah, yeah. Nice. Very nice.
Comfort. I'm making a note to buy it right now.
Yeah. I agree with you. Some of these areas are so dry that it's really nice to have... I see a number of other companies selling something very similar. I'm trying to remember the brand I have. I think it's the Sitecki, but I can't remember. But this one's better because you turn the water upside down so you get the whole benefit of the whole bottle there.
Yeah. I have good news.
Good news.
There's five inputs on that thing.
Ah.
We've got VGA to work.
Okay.
So we do
can at least show it.
Right.
But I gotta download the manual and figure out.
I got it right here.
Oh, you got it. Okay. Yeah. We gotta figure that out. After the show we'll play with it a little bit. Yeah. I hope that wasn't racist to say that Qinghao Chan. I made it up.
You made up a Chinese name.
It probably sounds something like that.
It could be a real one.
Could be real.
We don't know.
I have a buddy named that.
There you go.
So,
thank you, Johnny. Have fun in Alaska.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Take care. See you
Bye-bye.
Guys.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. We were speculating a little about the new iPhone, the iPhone 7, which... First of all, we don't know what it'll be called. In fact, I think the smart money is that Apple will stop using numbers at all, and just as they have with the iPad, and just call it the iPhone, the new iPhone. I know that sounds strange. The rumor is also that they will stop calling OS 10 OS 10. They'll just call it Mac OS to go along with TV OS, Watch OS, and Phone OS or iOS. I guess they'll still call it iOS. But the iPhone 7 or the new iPhone, which normally would be out in the fall, lots of interesting rumors. You heard our caller last hour say that one of the rumors was that they will abandon the headphone jack and replace it with a special pair of headphones that work with a lightning port. That's certainly technically completely feasible. The lightning port, which powers iPhones and iPads, also has data and can send data across it, so including audio. So wouldn't be such a big deal. They already exist. And remember, Apple bought the big headphone manufacturer Beats a year or so ago. And so they have the capability of making lightning port headphones. So I wouldn't be surprised. It would all be in service of making it thinner and lighter, which frankly is a fool's goal. But okay, it's thin enough and light enough. It does not need to be any thinner or lighter. But I think Johnny Ive likes to say, this is the thinnest, lightest iPhone we've ever made. There is a point at which you don't want to really get any thinner. And I think we might be there. What else will the iPhone 7 have? Well, we're hearing rumors it will have dual cameras. That's not the first phone to do this. The idea is the second camera can give you additional information and allows you to do things with your photos. Of course, remember, Apple's trying to find a way to get you to buy a new iPhone. And the truth is there hasn't been a lot of compelling improvements to the iPhone in a couple of generations. If you have an iPhone 5 or 5S, you probably, except for the size of the screen, don't feel like you need to upgrade. And if you don't want a bigger screen, there you go. But here's a rumor, and I really find it hard to believe. And again, I've been wrong about Apple a lot. According to Bloomberg, Apple is looking at replacing the radios that it uses in the iPhone, which come from Qualcomm, with Intel chips. That would be quite a shift. Bloomberg says Apple's next iPhone will use modems, that's what they call the radio in these phones, from Intel instead of Qualcomm, in some versions. Intel's really been struggling. You know, you probably saw they fired 12,000 or plan to fire 12,000 employees and really retrenched. They've backed off on the mobile chips that they were trying to develop. They've been beaten by the ARM chipset. But they really wanted, they realized that people are buying fewer and fewer computers. That market is dwindling fast. You know, desktop and laptop PCs. And more, our phones are our primary computing platform. So Intel, if it wants to be the primary computing processor manufacturer, needs to get in this mobile space. And they've been struggling. They've had a hard time. Maybe this is the wedge they've been looking for. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. You know, I don't report a lot of Apple rumors unless you ask me directly, mostly because no one knows. We really don't know what's going to happen until Apple announces it. They're very good at keeping everything a secret. Motorola surprised everybody this week. Lenovo owns Motorola now. Google sold them. The Chinese company Lenovo, which makes excellent laptops, is now making the Motorola phones. And they announced new Moto Gs. Those are the low-cost phones a couple of weeks ago. And this week they announced the new Moto Z, which is the replacement or the successor to the Moto X. They skipped Y. Because why you wouldn't buy a phone that said Moto? Why? Why? No, they went right to Z or Z if you're anywhere but the U.S. The Moto Z, it looks to be a very interesting Android phone. I'll certainly get one. It won't be available in the U.S. On all carriers until this fall. It'll come out this summer on Verizon only. It'll be a Droid phone. And yes, Type-C connectors. I think Google's kind of indicated it's going to be Type-C from now on. Of course, their Nexus phones are already. I would bet every phone manufacturer will go to Type-C going forward. HTC already has. I wonder if Samsung will. I think the only reason Samsung didn't is because they want you to use their Gear VR heads, you know, visors. And currently those use the older micro USB connector. Maybe that's why they didn't yet use Type-C in their Samsung Galaxy S7. We'll see. Maybe the Note 6 will. That's coming out this fall. Our show today brought to you by Tunnel Bear. I know a lot of you know about VPN, and probably many of you have used VPN. Tunnel Bear is the VPN of choice probably for more people than any other. It is awesome. And because they offer a free Tunnel Bear for the first 500 megabytes of data every month, it's a great casual VPN choice. So why would you want to use a VPN? Well, to avoid snooping in an open Wi-Fi access port, or maybe even from your own internet service provider. You may also want to change where you're coming from, what country you're coming from, to avoid geographic restrictions. Tunnel Bear is great at that. With, I think they have 20 different countries that you can appear to be coming out of. VPN is a must. Everybody needs a VPN. And if you go to trytunnelbear.com/techguy, you can create a free account, no credit card required, and then use Tunnel Bear for free for the first 500 megabytes. Now, you're not going to use that all the time, all month, but just do it now so you have it. So the next time you're at an open Wi-Fi access point, you go, gee, I just want to check my mail. You've got the Tunnel Bear right there, and it's easy to use. You don't have to configure ports, DNS, or do any other routing settings. It's handled all in the background. It's very easy. You can choose countries all around the world, UK, Germany, Spain, Netherlands, Australia, Hong Kong, Mexico, United States, Japan, France, Sweden, Singapore, Denmark, India, Canada, Ireland, Italy, Switzerland, Brazil, or Norway. So the geographic restrictions are a thing of the past. And what I love about them, they have a top-rated privacy policy, zero logging of user activity. Nobody knows what you're doing. Nobody can find out what you're doing. Tunnel Bear, you could try it free right now at trytunnelbear.com/techguy. Free account, no credit card needed, and then you've got the 500 megabytes whenever you need it. trytunnelbear.com/techguy. And if you decide to buy more access, they're very reasonable. They let you connect any 5 computers, tablets, or phones. They use AES 256-bit encryption, of course. And no logging. TryTunnelBear.com/TechGuy. Andrew, Orange County. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing okay, more or less. I'm calling about Windows 10, or as I call it, the 10th circle of hell.
Oh, dear. What's the matter?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I'll try to make it real quick. This is like a three-hour bitch that I got down to hopefully a minute or two.
Okay. I give you 142 seconds.
Okay, you got it. I had done all the research prior to doing the install, all the tips and everything else to get ready for this. I waited almost the last minute to do it. You know,
July 29th, the free upgrade runs out.
Yep, I did it like 6 or 7 weeks ago.
Okay.
I put a new SSD drive, and I moved my Windows 7 drive to the second bay.
Okay.
And I did I tried to do a clean install from my ISO, but it said no operating system found, so I installed 7 from the disks, didn't do any updates, and then did the Windows 10 update, and it worked.
Good.
I had to do some tweaking. Like, for instance, one thing I didn't realize, it said your system's compatible with Windows 10. What they don't tell you is that if your system's old, and mine's 6 years old, it's a Dell Studio i7, but it works just like it did the first day I bought it, so I have no problem.
Those studios are very nice. I love my studio. Yeah,
I maintained it well and did everything. It's plenty powerful. So I had to install some things like, you know, SnapTech for the touchpad.
Yeah, drivers for specific hardware. Yeah, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Did all of that. I was getting prepared to do a Clonezilla clone, so if I ever had to restore.
So what are your symptoms? Get to the chase. Cut to the chase. What happened?
Okay, the symptoms of this, I'm constantly getting problems. The first thing started with search. Search disappeared. I went into search. Type something in there, just a white, you know, a white monolith.
Yeah.
That's supposed to come up with nothing, all white. Somehow, with a whole bunch of research, I got it to work. Then start.
Ay, ay, ay.
Stop working. I turned the computer off, took the battery out, plugged it back in, and it went right back to the same screen, the desktop. I couldn't believe it. Finally, somehow, I got that to work.
I'm running out of time. Are you asking me what to do now? I'll talk. We got to take a break, but let's talk about next steps now that Windows has failed you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So my suggestion is, now that you have installed 10, even though you installed it over 7, once you've installed and activated 10, you can use that ISO you downloaded to do a clean install. You can wipe the drive and do a clean install. So that's one potential way to at least work on this. So in the compatibility tester, though, it said it's compatible. That's, I find that interesting.
It said it's compatible, but here's the gotcha. When you load it up, it loads up standard basic Windows drivers.
Yeah.
And I lost some capabilities with my video driver.
Right, but you can add third-party drivers that give it back those capabilities.
I got them back running, but problems continue. Permissions are constantly popping up. You don't have permission to this. You don't have permission to that. Chrome opened up one day, and there's nothing there. All bookmarks, everything's gone. I pinned an app to the taskbar, the writer, you know, the Windows writer, whatever. Click on it, it's gone. It's been deleted. Just stuff like that constantly. I went to the Windows Store.
This does not sound good, does it?
It's like every 2 days I put a fire out, I get 2 more fires.
Yeah.
So my question is,
what the hell do I do now, is your question. You could go back to Windows 7, which might not be a bad idea.
That's why I kept that drive.
Yeah, you were smart. You were very smart.
But is this, and I've been reading a ton on the internet. I'm you know, disabled, so I've got time to do it, and I'm kind of a, you know, geek. People are having this kind of problems a lot.
I have a Microsoft-made Surface Book, which was designed to run with 10. It comes from Microsoft, and it crashes all the time on me. Microsoft did finally do some firmware updates that made it work better, but I was just updating it the other day and I got a blue screen of death on the air. So the real problem is that for one thing, Windows 10 is still Windows 7, is still Windows Vista, is still Windows 2000, is Windows NT. They update stuff, but because they can't leave existing users in the lurch, they can't rewrite it from scratch. And so I think part of this is an aging operating system that is not super reliable because of its age.
But 7 was, perfect.
Yeah, I would say that's what you should be using on that machine. That machine was built for 7. It worked fine. It's clearly, driver issues. I don't think 10 by itself is problematic.
It's probably the age of computer, and you're right, drivers and maybe some other hardware. But
I would say you had a reliable system with Windows 7. It is a computer that's old and so was designed to work with Windows 7. As much as you may want to use Windows 10, I think it's time to stay on Windows 7.
Well, I wanted to use it. I wanted to learn it and, go forward to the future. But not right now. And maybe never, probably.
Now, you could go to Dell and see, do they have Windows drivers for that old studio? I mean, that's...
No, they're not supporting this.
That's the problem.
Disclaimer.
I would guess that's the real issue. In other words, because Dell does not make Windows 10 drivers for that particular hardware... That's the source of most of the problems.
Yeah.
The other possibility is that, have you ever replaced that? That's a new hard drive you put it on?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was going to say some of these could be ascribed to hardware, hard drive issues, but that's not the case, I would guess. It's a brand new hard drive.
No, it's brand new.
Yeah.
Okay. I got my answer. One quick question, though, that's been bothering me for over 30 years. You ever heard of a thing called Windows X?
Windows X?
No. Anyway, long story short, the ability to take a window, let's say it's full screen, shrink it to whatever size you need, and still have all the data proportionally shrink in size. So you have the same data.
Oh, that's kind of a neat idea. Yeah.
Have you ever heard of that? Anybody ever done that? I'm just surprised. It's actually 30 years ago never since. It was something they...
That's an interesting idea. No, I haven't. Maybe somebody in the chat room has.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. It's an interesting idea.
I've searched for years. Yeah.
I can't think of anything I've seen like that. Nowadays browsers do that, but it would be cool if everything did that, right?
Well, does a browser proportionally shrink everything?
If you
cut it in half, you still see the same data you had when it was full.
No, not really. No.
Yeah, that's what
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Everything just shrinks down proportionally. You see the same amount of data, it's just all smaller. But,
Yeah, the only thing I've seen that's even close to that is a number of editors now will do a map mode where they show you, as you're editing, the whole document in a little thumbnail that's shrunk down. So you can see the whole document, and you can pick a part of the document, but it's not you can't read it.
Yeah, Excel, Word, all that.
That's a really interesting question. That'd be an interesting feature. I'll keep my eye peeled for it. Maybe somebody in the chat room's got some experience doing that.
I'm just surprised that Microsoft didn't come up with that. I think that's such a cool thing to do, especially with bigger screens. When you're working at a job, a 20-inch screen, whatever.
Right.
You could have so many open with all that data in there.
Yeah. Interesting idea. Jeff Raskin, who was is passed away now, but was a brilliant thinker, who was really the inspiration for the Mac, was working on a new operating system that did exactly that. But it never really got released. Let me see if I can find. There is a demo of it online.
This is actually when I first saw it was a company called it was an aerospace company, but they had large screens, big CRTs, 24-inch CRTs. They had lots of different computers with different enterprise applications plus desktop applications, and they needed to have multiple windows, and that's X Windows, he called it, and you could shrink every one of them and proportionally see the same amount of data no matter how small the window got. I guess there was a limit, but
This is exactly what Jeff did. His son continued the work, but I'm looking for it now, and I think it's gone. But it was, they called it bird's eye view. Actually, you can download it, but it looks like it's for a Mac. If at raskinformac.com.
And
this is the closest.
Windows since 1983.
Just go look at raskinformac.com. Look at the demos and see if that's kind of what you were talking about, because I think it is. It allowed you to move everything around. I guess they're still developing it. That's kind of cool. It's $10.
What's it called again?
Raskin, R-A-S-K-I-N. And the program is Raskin for Mac. And the idea was you see all of your documents in a kind of a zoomable thumbnail mode, very much like what you described.
Yeah.
Very much what you described. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. We've got to go back to work now, unfortunately. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, virtual reality. I just got my Gear VR for my Samsung Galaxy S7. Samsung was offering, I don't know if they still are, a deal where if you bought a S7 when they first came out, they would eventually, it took them a while, send you a free VR visor that you could put your S7 in, and it would let you look at the world. You know, this might be useful right now, because Facebook announced this week that they're going to allow you to take 360-degree images either with a special camera designed for it or with your existing camera panning around and post them on Facebook. And it would automatically let people look at it, especially if they're using some sort of visor like this Gear VR or a Google Cardboard. I think that's kind of interesting. Immersive photography and videos, and it's supported on Facebook by Facebook. I think that's kind of cool. I'll put this thing in here and see if I can do the show in 3D. Oh, wow. You all look really...
Welcome to your Samsung Gear VR.
Thank you.
To start the setup process, remove your mobile device and install the required applications on it.
Oh, crud. All right. Well, I'll just have to keep going on with the radio show. Let's see here. Who's next? Dennis, San Jose, Costa Rica. Hello, Dennis.
Yeah. Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I am well. Welcome. Thanks for listening in Costa Rica.
Oh, I've been listening to you since I got back. I was in your studio on my way down about 2 years
ago. Oh, and have you moved down there?
Yeah. I was on my way to move down here, and me and a friend of mine that was, I was driving back to Kansas City.
I remember. How's it been? Yeah, so how's life in Costa Rica?
It's wonderful. You know, last year it was like we didn't have a rainy season, but it's been raining for a month already down here. Now I'm sick of rain.
Nature. Well, you are in the rainforest, my friend. That's good. You want a little wetness once in a while. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah, I just hope it stops again before, you know, somewhere. I hope we get a break.
You'll get some sun one of these days. What can I do for you?
All right, Leo, I can't understand what's going on. I got an iPhone 6 Plus that I got maybe 6 months ago. And I got a message from iCloud, you know, Apple, telling my iCloud was filling up. I was going to have to buy space. So I took and I deleted all the photos off my iPad.
Yeah.
And then my iPhone just keeps growing. I mean, 6 months ago, I had 1.8 gigabytes.
Right.
About a month ago, I had 2.2. Today, I got 2.5. And I said, I got to call Leo.
It's disappearing.
Photos. I actually took 100 megabytes of photos out. And it keeps growing. I got no video. I got no books. I mean, what would make it grow, 100 megabytes a week?
Yeah. So this is a known kind of issue with iOS, which is that it takes up space because it's caching information. One of the things, for instance, it does is saves all your messages, including pictures and video. And then when you delete the message, it doesn't delete the picture and video. But you don't have any way to access it. It's just sitting there in the other category. If you plug it into your computer and take a look at it in iTunes, it will show you the different kinds of stuff. And other is often a big yellow blob going across. And you go, well, what is other? That's what it is. It's cached temp files that aren't being deleted. The only way I know of to clean this up is to back up your iPhone, erase it, and then restore your backup. And that gets rid of all this cached stuff. Are you updating it? Are you updating it regularly?
Yeah, yeah. I noticed that my updates don't increase it either because I got to where I was looking to see if that was doing it.
So you know that on the iPhone there, you can go into general and look at how much data, how much space is being used by various programs. So sometimes it's a good idea to look at that and see if any particular program is using up a lot of space.
Yeah, because, you know, it puts them in order, and the next largest program I got is only 65 megabytes.
Yeah, see, that's not – and that includes, by the way, data that's being saved by the program, not just the program itself, but backup data. Yeah, I feel like
– So nothing's growing, you know, right below my phone.
But every time you receive a message, it's growing, and every time your browser caches data, it's growing. Every time you surf, it's growing. But the problem is Apple gives you no easy way to access and clear this data.
They're going to keep filling my phone up until I have to give up and buy more data.
No, in theory, it's going to be deleted. So what you do is you go to General, the settings in General, and you go to Storage and iCloud Usage, right?
Sure.
And you'll see a button that says Manage Usage, and that'll show you what, you know, is this where you, for instance, I have 42.9 gigs of music on my iPad, and I can tap that, and I can clean that up. Similarly, my photos and camera have 18 gigs used. This is all on my iPad, so I have a lot of, I have 128 gig iPad. So the fact that it's used 87 gigabytes is not the end of the world, but you can go through it and clean it up. But as I said, if there's a lot of stuff that isn't accounted for, that's probably that other temp cached stuff. And the only way I know of deleting that is formatting your phone. Back it up first, of course. The backup will not back up this extra stuff and delete it. But first thing I'd do is I'd go to General, Storage and iCloud Usage, and see what's using up all that space, and maybe you can delete stuff to save some space. You know, you can manage storage. You can also do that, by the way, in the iCloud there, and maybe the iCloud is full, whereas your phone is not, but it does sound like your phone is. How can I say this diplomatically? The iPhone is designed for people who don't want to know anything about how a computer works, who don't really want to deal with stuff. And so Apple has this attitude, and probably rightly so, that just let us do it. We'll take care of it. The problem is stuff like this. When it doesn't take care of it, you have no means of doing so because they don't want to have a lot of settings that for experts. There are no expert settings on iOS. It's designed for the rest of us, which is fine if it works. Sometimes it doesn't work. And so then you're kind of stuck. In this case, while it would be wonderful if there were a button that said delete temp files, as most operating systems have, or you could put a program on there that would do it, you can't because Apple doesn't put that button there because that's scary to people. And then and they don't allow third-party apps to do this either because that's bad security, poor security. Every app can only access its own data, not anybody else's data. So they've really locked it down. So the only way I know to do this is to erase the phone and restore from a backup. The backup will not back up all this extra stuff. That should give you some extra space. I don't think Apple's trying to get you to buy more iCloud space because they make money on it. I don't buy into the conspiracy theories that Apple's doing this as a, you know, way to get money out of you. I think that really they're just trying to do the right thing, which is hide complexity from normal users because it scares them. It's confusing, and buttons like that give people a chance to do things that are not a good idea. So they don't put them in there, and they don't let anybody else do it. And then, unfortunately, if something does go wrong, you're kind of stuck. It's one of the reasons I think Apple really should never offer or should never have offered 8 gigabyte and 16 gigabyte phones. If you had a 64 gigabyte phone or a 128 gigabyte phone, you probably wouldn't care. and it wouldn't matter. And what do you bet? Most of the engineers at Apple, that's what they have, right? So they never see this. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, what do I have to install? Next. Downloading, enjoy an immersive VR reality experience with the Gear VR. This setup process requires a network connection. All right, all right. Agree, I agree. Wow, Gear VR service, Gear VR system, Gear VR video, Gear VR gallery, app manager, Oculus, and Oculus Home. 129 megabytes of stuff. It's going to be a while. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, Ask Leo. Chuck in Glendale. Hi, Chuck. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good afternoon. I have one of those Ching televisions.
The TCL? Yeah. Yes. Actually, there's two. You know, it's interesting because, of course, for a long time, TVs were made in the USA. You got RCA, Westinghouse, the names and brands that we grew up with and love. Then Japan took over. Remember Sony? That was the king of the hill for a long time. And very famously, the guy in charge of Samsung looked at the success the Japanese were having and said, we, in the next 10 years, we're going to make Samsung and Korea be the thing in television. And they did. Samsung and LG, both Korean companies, dominate right now. Chinese companies have done exactly the same thing. They've looked at the success of the Korean companies said, why not us? And so TCL and Huawei and Xiaomi all have big – I know it sounds like I'm making up names, but it's Chinese. They all have big efforts to – and very good – by the way, very good TVs. They plan to move in big time. I remember the shock at CES a couple of years ago when Microsoft stopped coming to CES and their booth was taken over by a Chinese company. I don't know if it was TCL. I can't remember who it was, but it was taken over. I think maybe Xiaomi, by a Chinese company. It was like, wow, that's a big booth. So they have great ambitions in this market. You'll be seeing a lot more of them. But what can I do for you now?
You know, I'm looking for, I need the freedom to connect my Apple iPad or my Android phone to any TV or projector wirelessly.
Yes.
I want to do it without an app, without a Wi-Fi, without a cable, and without knowing my subnet password. Is that a possibility?
It is. Well, okay. On Apple, it requires an Apple TV, period. That's that little black puck that Apple sells for $100 or $200 that gives you Apple, gives you the capability of putting an Apple device of any kind, Mac, iPad, or iPhone, up on your TV screen. It works very well. It's called Apple AirPlay, rather. It works very well, but that's the only way to do it. Now, on the Android side, it's a little different because there are – your TV may support – actually, there probably are some TVs that support Apple TV in the TV. I haven't seen them, but I wouldn't be surprised. More TVs support other technologies like DLNA is one. Miracast is another. Both of those are Windows-focused technologies, and many phones, Windows phones and Android phones, will support those without additional hardware. So you should check to see what capabilities your TV has. There, Intel had another one called Wireless Display that also may be built into the TV. And I think you can do that as well. Yeah.
Leo, you missed my point. What I'm saying is I don't want to go through the airport carrying all this luggage. And so consequently, what I'm looking for is to be able to do this at any site. Because to use an Apple –
I see. So you can do it. For instance, our conference room has an Apple TV for that very reason. But you're going somewhere, you don't know what they've got, and you want to just be able to do it wirelessly. You can't. You can't. Dan in Fresno, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Leo. I have a question. I was using my iPhone 5S the other day. And I was watching a show on my Comcast app, and I got a message, a pop-up was like, you know when you get the software updates on an iPhone, mm-hmm. you know, the new version of iOS?
Mm-hmm.
It was something like that, and it said that someone was trying to sign into a device using my Apple ID. I got the choices of don't allow or allow, so I said don't.
Right.
And then it came up with a message that said, you know, if I thought somebody was doing that, that I should change my password. And at this point, I'm like, okay, this doesn't seem right. You know, I always get verification codes and things like that because I have two-factor set up.
Good. You know, that's the good news is you're safe because if you have two-factor, nobody's going to be able to figure that one out.
Right. But so I called Apple. I left the screen up and I called Apple and they said, no, it's nothing to worry about. We don't ever send out any messages like that.
Oh, that's not true. Wait a minute. Slow down, Apple. I see that message all the time. What are they talking about? What did you see this on your television?
No. I was on my iPhone. I was watching. I was using the Comcast TV app.
Oh! I understand. So you were watching an app.
Yeah.
So the pop-up didn't come from the app. The pop-up came from your iPhone.
Right.
Anytime you sign onto your Apple account on another device, you will get a pop-up. I don't know why Apple said we don't do that. That's exactly what they do. You get a pop-up that says you've just signed into your Apple account on a new device.
That's what I was thinking.
Yes. Apple said that doesn't happen? What are they, nuts? Yeah. Have they never used any?
I talked to two different people. You know, I talked to somebody that night, and then the next morning I said, you know what, I'm going to call back.
And they both said that?
And they both said that.
Well, you've seen it, haven't you? I've seen it.
You know what? I haven't because I only signed into one of the...
So just the other day, I wanted to have my Apple account work on a new device. I can't remember what it was. And so, in fact, Apple even does this on the... Oh, I know what it was. I rebuilt one of my Macs, redid all the software, erased it and wiped it out. And it says, okay, log into iCloud, which I did. And it said, okay, if you want to have full access to here's an example, messages, you'll need to approve this on another Apple device. A pop-up shows up on my iPad, my iPhone, all of which saying, another machine is trying to access messages, is that okay? It actually asks for a 4-digit code, pops up the code, I put in the code and does it. The other thing that'll happen is and this happened to me as well, when you set up a new app Macintosh, you'll get a notice that there's another Macintosh using this account.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you got.
Yeah, see, that's what I was thinking. But, you know, when it asked me if I wanted to continue to change my password, I said, you know what, I better check
that. That may not be Apple. I've never seen, so maybe that's what they're saying is, well, we do say this, but not with this additional thing you might want to change your password.
Right.
And it's certainly what you don't want to do is get into some do that right there and then, because if that's a pop-up coming from a browser, it may direct you to a window that looks like you're logging into Apple. And in fact, it's a bogus window. It's a phishing scam. So that's probably what Apple was telling you. No, never do that.
Right. I wasn't using the Safari. Nothing else was open besides the TV, the Comcast app. But what I did notice was after I got off the phone with them, they said, no, just clear the message and don't worry about it. I couldn't clear the message.
Yeah.
You know, when I locked my phone and then tried unlocking it.
It was still there.
It showed up as a notification. And when I unlocked the phone, it popped up again. It wasn't until I restarted the phone that it went away.
Wow. So that is coming from Safari. Remember, Safari is always available to any app. That's WebKit, and it's able to, any app can generate a WebKit notice like that. So some app ran and popped up a spurious notice, probably trying to get you to enter your Apple credentials into a bogus field.
Mm-hmm.
You were right to be suspicious. You didn't do it, right?
No.
And so case closed. It's too bad it was so hard to get rid of, but yeah, that is fake. Apple's right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, the pop-up saying another device is using your Mac is legit. Or using your iCloud is legit. The thing that made it and the thing that made them suspicious was this thing about, oh, and now let's get your password changed here. Come and enter your new password. That was not legit. Let's go back to the phones. David in Alhambra. Hey, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'll do better if you can help me out.
I'll try. I'll do my best.
Okay. I have T-Mobile, and before the Marshmallow updated, I cut and copied on my desktop the phone file and the SD file. So I wanted a fresh, new, clean slate, new operating system, fresh phone. So I updated without backing up any of my apps or reloading them.
Yeah.
And so I kind of messed up. So now my 1Password vault didn't back up because I thought it would see it, recognize my phone, and get it. And then I had some really cool apps like Showtime, and there were like apps that I had to download on my my actual computer. And
okay,
then
here's the first thing to do, and I think this will solve your problem, is you open the Google Play Store, and you know there's a menu item, My Apps. You go there, and then above at the top there's something that says, I think it says, on my phone, not on my phone. And it knows every app you've downloaded, and if it's not on your phone, you can re-download, though, and I'll give you a little trick that they don't document anywhere. If you press and hold the first app you want, it'll select it, but then you can continue down that list tapping them, tap, 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 then press the install button. So you can tap all the apps that you want back, select them all from that list, and press install. It'll reinstall all those apps. And even if you had backed it up, that's the way you would probably be doing it. Now, your 1Password vault, that's another matter. If that's the only place you had it, you're in trouble. 1Password, which I love, and has an interesting security model, which I kind of agree with, which is your password vault, where you're storing all your passwords, is your responsibility. They don't store it for you. Most other password vaults keep a copy on their server. And by doing so, that makes it easy for you to use more devices because you log into your account and the passwords are up there in the cloud. 1Password, maybe there's a way that you can say, please store it for me. I don't think there is. They let you say, well, you can use Dropbox or you can do it your way. You can sync it, whatever. But they let you be responsible for that. So if you're using 1Password, it's really important that you make sure that your password vault exists in more than one place for this exact reason. If that was the only place you had your password vault, if you didn't put it on Dropbox, if you didn't put it on a computer, if you didn't sync with anything, because you know it allow you to do that as well. I like that feature where you can turn on, you know, on your computer, you could say sync my password vault. Now, if you have your password vault on your computer, you're golden, because all you have to do is reinstall 1Password, say sync my vault with my computer, do the same on your computer. They have to be on the same Wi-Fi network. They'll see each other and they'll go, and it'll copy all your passwords and logins from your computer. So you're golden in that case. I hope you did that. But that is a good thing to remember with 1Password. You're responsible for your vault. That's good for security point of view because they don't have access to your data. No one can steal it from the 1Password site because they don't have it. But it does put the onus on you to make sure you keep a copy of it. I bet you have it on your computer. So sync it with your computer. And then again, the Play Store is nice. Now, one thing I would turn on for future, it's up to you. A lot of people don't like to do this, but if you go into I think it's called backup and reset, something like that, in the settings on an Android device, you can say back up my settings. In your case, you'd have two choices, to Samsung or to Google, or both. That's what I do. So if you have a Samsung account, you log into that and you can create one for free. It will automatically copy settings, apps, things like that. Not all the data, but just enough to get you restarted. Google will do the same thing. You'll still have to re-download those apps because they want you to get the latest versions. But that's nice because you don't have to remember your Wi-Fi passwords, things like that. One of the reasons people don't like to do that is because Samsung and or Google now have your Wi-Fi passwords and stuff like that. And some people say, I don't want anybody to know that. So if you've done the trust no one route, then you're going to have to re-enter your passwords, Wi-Fi passwords, things like that. And I hope you made a copy of 1Password because that maybe has everything. But the nice thing about apps on Android, and it really makes it easy, is the Android Play Store, the Google Play Store, remembers everything you've ever downloaded and will let you re-download it again. 8888-ASK-LEO, Jonathan, Durango, Colorado. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I'll try to make this short. Had a customer on a snowmobile tour last year lose an iPad. The snow has since melted. I took a big, long hike and found the iPad.
OMG. I don't think it works.
It was laying in the snow with the cover open, with the screen facing the sky. I picked it up and pressed the power button, and it came right on.
OMGG! It worked! Wow, you're very lucky, because moisture, of course, if it had leaked into that iPad, could have made it unusable.
And it was facing the sky, so, I mean, it's been rained on and snowed on.
That's pretty impressive. Wow.
First turned it on, it said that it hadn't connected to anything in 25 weeks.
Wow.
So
by the way, I would not continue to run it until you've fully dried it out.
Okay. Well, it was sitting in the grass when I finally found it. So.
Yeah, I'm sure it got some moisture in there. And so what you can't pop. Normally, what I would say is pop the battery and let it fully dry out before you apply any juice. Because see, the risk is that the liquid in there will short circuit the circuitry. And so if power is applied to the circuitry, it'll fry it. Not to mention corrosion. After 25 weeks, you probably get some corrosion in there as well. So the best thing to do is not turn it on. Power it down if you can. And, you know, press and hold the on-off switch until it says slide to power off, then power it off and cross your fingers. And then I would really let it dry out for a week or so. Make sure all the moisture's out of there. Maybe rotate it so that anything will drip out before you power it up again.
Well, here's my issue. The lady was really upset that we wouldn't go back out that evening because it was snowing.
Sorry, lady. I'm not going to die in a landslide, snow slide. Just because you lost your iPad out there. What's she doing with an iPad out there anyway?
Good question. But she left in a huff and a puff.
Oh.
And did not leave any contact.
Oh.
So I tried passwords until, you know, it went through all of them, you know, just like the San Bernardino thing. I went through until it finally is locked up solid.
Uh-oh.
So now I'm wondering if there's any way I could connect to anything and either get her info or potentially...
Well, chances are she connected to the Wi-Fi at your lodge. So bring it back to the lodge and just let it sit there connected to the Wi-Fi and hope that she runs Find My iPad sometime because it'll show up. Maybe send out an email to all your previous clients. If you lost an iPad, turn on Find My iPad because we may have it.
Well, you know, it's hard to she even had an email associated with her reservation or
right. You may be out of luck. I mean, it really is going to be up to her now to turn Find My iPad on, I'm afraid.
Well, and at this point, too, if I can't, she's probably moved on now 25 weeks later.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if I can't find out who she is there a way I can hook up to
Can I use it, you're wondering? No, and unfortunately... For you, Apple makes it so that you cannot use it. It's done. Because in order to even to reboot and reformat that, you'd have to have her iCloud password. This is how Apple prevents or discourages theft of iPhones and iPads. They're not reusable if you find somebody's iPhone or iPad. You can't use it without their login ever again. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yes, Dr. Mom says... Here's what you should do. Here's a good idea, Jonathan. Call Apple because they would love to put that in an ad and show it, and maybe they'll give you a new one.
Now, that's an idea because we even took pictures of where it was sitting.
Yeah, call Apple because that's the best damn ad for Apple I've ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, face up, and it's been there in the snow.
Good. I'm glad you took pictures because they could use that. That's a great idea. Thank you, Dr. Mom. Call Apple, say, hey, I got this. Or post it on an Apple forum or something, and maybe they'll give you a new one. But you cannot recycle iPads. You can't just, you know, if you find one, make it your own, unfortunately. This is something they've done to prevent and discourage theft. Sometimes, now, what you could do is bring it to an Apple store, and they might be able to, in fact, almost certainly the Apple store could get into it and get her Apple account out of it. They have means. They don't share with the general public.
No, I hold it a small ransom. And
bring it to an Apple store and tell them the story and show them the pictures. You never know. I mean, that's if I were Apple, I would put that in an ad.
Yeah, on that same trip, I also found a Samsung S5 and a GoPro camera.
Bet those didn't work.
Yes, they both powered right on. Everything works like brand new.
What? Hey, this is a lucrative side business you got going here. The Lost Electronics.
I'm going to go walk to our most popular picture-taking spots, and there's probably 10 more phones up
there. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Isn't that interesting? You're in Durango, huh?
People lose devices.
All the time.
Right.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Wow. Well, good luck. I hope Apple gives you a new one, because that's a great story. Fire Apple, I'd give them a new one. What do you think? Hey, Decky D.
Hey, Leo.
How you doing?
I'm good. No, when I was a kid, we had a house in the country, and we had I think it was Philco TV.
Philco, and, here's the name.
Yes, and we went up, and the TV was frozen. Everything was frozen because the heat had gone off.
Right.
And we turned on the heat, and we waited 4 hours and turned it on, and it did work.
Wow.
And I wrote them, and they said, "We're pleased to hear that, but please don't do that anymore."
Yeah, right.
Right. Because
that's one reason supposed Apple to do that. Might not want to run that ad.
Yes,
they
exactly.
They don't want to imply that you could do that.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Yeah. This show today brought to you by our friends at The Tracker. They have a great slogan at The Tracker. They say, "The only thing hard to find about The Tracker is our website." Because it is kind of spelled funny. TheTracker.com. What's great about The Tracker is you ever lose anything? I lose things all the time. So this is my man bag, and I got a tracker in my man bag. But see, I got a clever trick. Although with the Father's Day special, I could get a tracker for each. I probably should do that. I got the tracker on my keys, right? And then my keys are chained to my bag, so it does double duty. This is the tracker. This is the Tracker Bravo. Tracker Bravo is really, this is their newest. You maybe have seen the tracker, I think it was Kickstarter, right? The Tracker Bravo is anodized aluminum, very thin, super light, has a battery that lasts a year. This is Bluetooth, so this pairs to my phone with the tracker app on my phone. And now, two things. If I lose my bag or my keys, I can go to my phone and I could see where I left them. But also, if I leave my phone behind, happened actually this morning. If I leave my phone behind, the tracker will go, beep, 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 you left your phone behind. Or if you can't find your phone, you press a button on the tracker, and it makes the phone ring even if it's silenced. This is a really, it's a perfect device for absent-minded people like me. I want you to go to thetracker.com. They've got a great Father's Day special right now. Buy two, get two free. This is good for everybody. You don't need to use a TWIT offer code or anything. Customize your two-way separation alerts to receive notifications before you leave your item behind. If you lose your phone, you press the button. The phone rings even when it's on silent. As I said, the Bravo is beautiful. It comes in a variety of colors, which is nice because then you have a different color for each device. And here's one of the cool things about the tracker is the crowd network. So it has the largest crowd GPS network in the world. There are 1.5 million trackers out there. Look at the map. And so, you know, it's Bluetooth. So when you get far enough away from your tracker, you're not going to get any information from it. But if anybody gets within 100 feet of your tracker, their application will make a note of it and send you an alert. It's Bluetooth LE, so the battery lasts over a year. You can even buy a water-resistant case, which means you could put your tracker on a pet. And we have a pet that we're going to put the tracker on, let me tell you. And put it right on the pet collar with the water-resistant. Now, the hardest thing you'll ever have to find is their website. It's THETRACK, thetrackr.com. Pronounce it thetracker.com. And don't forget, the Father's Day sale is a limited time now through June 13th only. So it means you only have two more days to get the buy two, get two free deal. But we will continue to do the Tech Guy offer code, and that'll get you a free color upgrade too. So you get a little bit of something from both of us. Thetracker.com, buy two, get two free, and use the promo code Tech Guy to get the free color upgrade. Do that, because that way they know that you heard about it. Oh, look at that. That dad lost his keys, but fortunately he can see where they are on the beach. TheTracker.com. Promo code Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I just want to celebrate. Another year with the Gizwiz.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Dickie D.
Hey, Leo. You know, the chat room, someone in the chat room had a good thing. Just ask Siri who owns the iPad.
Who owns
iPad.
You? Yeah. Okay, exactly. Siri, who owns you?
Yeah, there you
actually,
go.
The chat room did say, and I think this is absolutely true, if you brought it to an Apple store, they could absolutely find the owner because they have all of that information, presumably. Yeah.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
Dick D. Bartolo, Mad's maddest writer. He's been writing for Mad Magazine for half a century.
And yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's 50 years, right?
Something like that. Yeah. Okay. It's a long time, but he's also a gadget hound, has been for years.
Yeah. And you and I, we both love LEDs.
Yes.
And, you know, when we were kids, you would go to Radio Shack and you could buy an LED for about $6.
Right.
So now I saw, and I had to have it, the Illumi Tower work light, which is 60 LEDs.
Oh, I bet it's really bright, too.
Under $20.
Wow.
Okay. So it's actually a tower. It's like about 14 inches high and about 3 inches wide, and it has high and low. And what's good about this is if you have to be outdoors at night doing a chore, as opposed to a flashlight, this is a very wide beam. It's 720 lumens. It has high, low, and
let's put it this way. If you turn it on, the neighbors are going to think the aliens have landed.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I see you found it there, but I have it even cheaper.
This is from Rakuten, which I guess is an online catalog.
You know what, Leo? It used to be buy.com. And I don't know how they went from...
This is the same?
This is what I read, that it was buy.com. And my guess is, why would you go from Rakuten to...
I know what I'm going to get at buy.com.
Yeah. My guess is that they were able to sell. There's the cheaper place. It's $20 there or two for $32.
PulseTV.com.
PulseTV. Now, there's a trade-off which you should know about. It will not work when it's plugged in. And
that's not much good. What do you mean it won't work when it's plugged in?
Because they opted to make it that if it's plugged in and the power goes out, then it comes on.
Oh, so it also is an emergency light.
As an emergency light. Okay, so if you want to use it for that, make sure the switch is in low. And then if the power goes out, the Illumi Tower will stay on for 6 hours.
Oh, that's a lot.
Okay. Yeah, so in the high position.
It's got a battery in it.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And
how long is that? Because it looks really big, but now that
It's big. It's I'm going to say it's about 14 inches long and about 3.5 inches wide, 2 inches thick.
So it's not like 3 feet tall. It's
No. Has a kickstand, hanging stand, and comes with mounting hardware.
I like the idea of though mounting this somewhere in your house, you know, kind of unobtrusively, so that the power and then plugging in, if the power goes out, you've got lights. You might want a few of these you put on baseboards or somewhere like that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And they can stay plugged in. They'll be charged all the time. And as the power goes out, they'll come on.
Yeah.
So cool. it's a neat idea.
The Illumi Tower.
Tower. Yeah. Now, the Illumi Tower, I'm getting those too.
Yeah.
They're LED towels.
Those don't work when they're plugged in either.
Not at all. Well, they work just once.
This is cool. And as we mentioned, $20 at PulseTV.com.
Exactly.
Yeah. Dick is at GizWiz.tv. GizWiz.biz is actually his website. GizWiz.tv is his podcast. Nominated for a podcast award in technology. Is it too late to go vote?
No. Two more. Voting ends on the 16th.
Where should people go if they want to vote for it?
On the 12th, actually, tomorrow. It's podcastawards.com, and we're in the tech category all the way at the bottom of the list.
So if you can't win with the power of this radio show, I don't know what.
I think you'll put us over the top.
I think we should. Everybody go to podcastawards.com, vote for the GizWiz. If you haven't seen the show, maybe go watch it first at gizwiz.tv. And if you want to play Dick's contest, the what the heck is it contest, what he's got is a close-up picture of a gadget This one looks like a comb for a troll doll. That's what my guess is.
That's pretty good.
If you look at that picture, there are 12 Mad magazines autographed by Dick for the right answer and 24 for the best wrong answer. So you really just give it a good wrong answer, you're set. So isn't that great? So everybody go to gizwiz.biz. Thank you, Dickie.
Perfect.
D.
Perfect. No, thank you, sir. I'll see you later.
All right. Turn on
next week.
Turn on your light, but don't plug it in. Well, no, actually, it sounds like a good idea for an emergency light. We should probably have a few of those around the studio. Of course, if the power's out, I'm not on the air, so I'm just going to take a nap anyway. Cassie, Crystal River, Florida. I think you're going to be the last call of the day. Hi, Cassie.
Oh, hello, Leo. Such a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
I worship you. You are the king of kings.
Wow. No, I think that's somebody else. You probably shouldn't worship me, but you should listen to the show every week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I look up to you.
Thank you.
At the utmost, however we can worship.
Well, what can I do to help you now that you've given me all this praise?
Well, because you're the best, and I know I've asked a million people, and everybody's given me a million answers, I know you're the one to
better get this one right now. All right, well, what's the problem?
No. I know it's easy for someone like you, but me, nah. Now, I did back in, I'm a truck driver by trade, but I got injured just a little.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I taught myself, but thank you. I taught myself how to program HTML, you know, back in, that was 96, I believe.
Wow, but very early days,
Mom did the whole family thing,
good.
That kind of took a side burner, so I've been out of it for a while. I'm trying to reteach myself now as a single mom.
Great.
And one of my big questions, and I tried YouTubing everything, and I really, or Googling stuff, and I really couldn't get a sufficient answer, so I knew the king of the technical world. Does that sound better?
Yes, I'll take that.
Okay. The king of the technical world would know this without a blank. I have three laptops. The fourth is kind of on its brink. I have one desktop, which I use no more because it's XP. I just keep for legacy. But my question is, I do all the backup like you say, but I would like to have a backup that I could carry with me just in case. You never know.
Not a bad idea.
I bought one of the, I bought a couple of the two terabytes I think it was a 4 or 5 terabyte.
Oh, they're so cheap now. I bought a Seagate 5 terabyte for $140. 5 terabytes!
I know, it's crazy. But my main question is, because I had a little problem, and I don't know if it's because I started with the XP. All my laptops now are 7s. I did the never 10.
Good.
So I'm keeping, if I buy a new one, I'll get the 10. But there's just been so many problems with switching over
that. Hold on a second. I'll have to take the rest of this call off the air because I just ran out of time. You've been too nice. Thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time. Have a great Geek Week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sorry about that. I had to finish the show, but continue on.
Oh, God, thank you so much. Last time I just got dropped and nothing.
Oh, I know. It's hard, and it's so hard to get through, and you have to wait so long, so I appreciate your patience.
I know. God bless you for doing this one time.
No, I'm glad to do it.
I'll make it really quick. My question is, can I put, since I had the blue screen of death on the first one, which is an XP, and can I back up all different laptops to the same drive, the same backup?
Absolutely. It would depend on the backup program you're using, of course.
Okay, all I know is it's a Toshiba.
Using the built-in
I haven't done anything
Windows
to it yet without your knowledge.
Okay, so what I would probably do is image. I think the best way to do this would be to image the drives.
Okay.
And so there are a number of programs that will do this. And what it's going to do is take everything that's on the drive exactly as is. It's make, like making a freeze-dried copy of the drive and put it in a single file on that backup.
Okay.
And that way you can restore it and
are
get it.
Are these able to be backed up daily as I do work on them?
No. So, okay. So, so this is a different kind of backup. I would do this first, which is make an image. I'll give you a website. This will do this very easily and nicely. It's not, I think it's $40 for the program. It's called Drive Snapshot.
Drive Snapshot.
And you get it at drivesnapshot.de. And so you can run that on any of your Windows machines and have the external drive plugged in and say, I want to make an image of this Windows machine on that external drive. And it'll make a file. It'll easily fit on that if you get a 3 or 4 terabyte.
Oh, yeah, I've got plenty of room.
Yeah. And so it'll make a single file that is the image of that. Okay. So you'll have one for each of your machines, and that will get you back to the way it is exactly right now.
Okay.
Then going forward, what you'll want to use is a backup program. Windows comes with one, so you can continue to use that, that will back up anything that's been changed since then.
And on the Windows 7?
Yeah, 7 has it. Even XP has it.
Okay.
So you just run that backup program.
Was that the drive snap?
No, the Windows comes with it.
Oh.
So if you look in the menu, it's called Windows Backup.
Oh, okay.
And then you'll run that whenever you want, every week, every day, every hour, and it'll back up changes.
Okay.
And you'll probably want a different folder for each machine and back it up into that folder on the external. But the nice thing about having the drive snapshot is if the hard drive dies or whatever, you just plug in the drive snapshot. You want to make a standalone snapshot. So you'll double click that snapshot. It'll run and restore the machine without even having Windows installed. So it's a very easy way to get that machine back up and running and then run Windows backup and restore the changed files since then.
Okay.
Does that
okay.
make sense?
Wonderful.
The reason you do that is because otherwise, if you use Windows Backup, you have to fully install Windows before you can restore.
Right.
Which is a pain in the butt. So this way, you've got the image, you restore the image, that gets you right back to today.
Okay.
And you can make new images once in a while. You have enough storage. So it gets you back to the last time you made an image. And then use the Windows backup to restore any additional files that you changed since then.
How often do you recommend backup?
Well, generally the way I use it is I'll use it the first time I get a new system, I'll image it immediately. So now I have a copy of the system as it came to me from the factory. Too late for you on that.
Yeah. I'm a dummy. I didn't do that.
That's too late. No, you're not a dummy, but this is what I do. And then I install everything. I get it just the way I want it. Then I make another image there. And then that's the best image because that's one that there's no malware on it. There's no problems. Everything's working. But, and then it's up to you, but I would say every month, every 3 months, make another image. And that will get you back. But remember, you want to do that now while things are working. Because remember, it's going to, even if things are not working, it's going to back up everything. So it'll back up a non-working Windows system as well. So you kind of want a known good version. And then you do it every month or so as long as things are working fine. But the idea is, as long as you've done the backup after that, you say again?
I'm sorry, sir. One of them is brand new. All I have is put some movies. I've taken my movie collection, which I'm an old truck driver, so I've got over like 500 movies.
Oh, boy. You may not have room for all of that.
of a terabyte.
Okay.
But that's not something I need to carry with me every day. But I just like to have the important stuff with me.
No, that's good. And having that drive snapshot on an external...
It's a little bit bigger than a pack of cigarettes now. So.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that amazing? So having a drive snapshot on that external will hold you in good stead. But remember, that snapshot only goes to that machine. You can't put a snapshot on a different machine.
Okay. And then separate folders for each one?
I would, yeah. And then use Windows Backup to back up each machine into that folder.
Okay, so I guess the blue screen of death that I saw in the beginning was probably just because the XP was no longer being updated, or I had...
Oh, God only knows. I mean,
okay.
XP did that a lot.
No, I get it. I'm not going to try to pick your brain because it's something that you'd have to see, I'm sure. So, okay, so from this point, God, because now I won't have, there won't be any show notes for me to look at. Since right?
No, they'll put this in the show notes.
Oh, will they? Oh, yeah.
Because it's part of the podcast. It's part of the podcast.
Architect King. Oh, so doll, I love you to death. I've been watching you and listening to you for you forever and ever.
Bless you, Cassie.
Love it.
Bless
I love
you.
It.
Thank you for
okay.
listening.
So have a... I just want to make sure I got this right. I know you want to go. You had a long day. You want to get out of there. I just want to make sure I got it right. Okay, I do the snapshot, which is an image drive of all three in different folders. And then do I leave the unit hooked up? To the
no, it doesn't matter at that point. You don't need to. Just whenever you want to do more backup, you can hook it up. But you could put it somewhere else for the rest of the time.
Okay. And I don't have to set it up or
no. It's very straightforward. Drivesnapshot.de. It's a really nice little program.
Okay. Because I recall when I plugged it into the second one, it did not show as a drive.
Well, you mean the blue screen one?
I'm sorry?
You mean the blue screen one?
No, not the blue screen. That's the desktop, which I no longer use.
Okay.
It was my first laptop, which is an Acer.
And you plugged in the external and it didn't show up?
Yes, sir.
Hmm. Try again. I mean, if it's showing up on the other machines, it should show up on that one.
It didn't. I didn't plug it into the third one.
Well, see if it doesn't show up.
The blue screen on the desktop, I was a little weary.
Yeah,
about
if it doesn't show up, you might have to format it first.
That's the word I was thinking of, formatting.
Yeah. If it's not showing up on any of the machines, then it's just not formatted. It's a blank disk. But you can do that easily. You want
without loss?
Well, yeah, you'll lose. Well. You put something, there's something on it already?
No, not on the drive. No, sir.
No. So sometimes, usually when you buy a drive, it's formatted for Windows right out of the box.
Okay. Is that the NTSC or
NTFS? Probably not. It's probably FAT. They do the thing that's the most compatible. But as long as all of your machines are Windows XP or later, you can use NTFS. That would be the best choice.
Okay, so instead of the FAT, do the NTSV?
NTFS, yep.
NTFS. Yep. I'm sorry, I'm nervous.
Don't be nervous, it's just us. Nobody's listening. Yeah.
That was my main question, whether I needed to format it.
You might need to, yeah, and you can do that in the disk management utility. You can see if it's formatted. The way to get to that, let's see, you're going to do this on Windows 7?
Yes, sir.
I think on Windows 7, if you hit Windows key X, maybe only 8 and 10, I can't remember. Probably the best thing to do is right-click on My Computer and select Properties.
Okay.
And that'll show you, in the Properties, there'll be a Management Console.
Uh-huh.
And you open the Management Console, and in there's a Storage entry, and you click that, and it'll show you whatever drives are connected, whether they're partitioned, how they're partitioned, and whether they're formatted. And so even if you can't see the external drive in the operating system, if it's an unformatted drive that is properly connected, you'll still see it. It'll just say it's not formatted. Then you just click on it, and if you have to, you'll create a partition on it. One thing you could do is you could create a partition for each machine. I wouldn't do that. Just one partition.
Formatting.
Yeah, one partition and then format it, yeah.
The partitions are totally alien to me.
Don't mess with partitions then. Just format it.
Okay. Now format each machine, each three.
No, don't format your machines. Just format that external.
Oh.
If you format the machines, you're going to have an erased machine. Only the external drive.
It erases my GoPro, so okay.
Yeah, don't erase anything. Don't format the machine, just the external drive once.
Okay, and then set up the three separate folders from there after I format it, and then it should show up on my drive.
Then it should show up, yeah. The only reason I could think of it not showing up, unless it's broken, is that it's not formatted yet.
Well, like, one of them is brand new, like I said, and I haven't noticed, knock on wood, any problems with it. The older one's a 7, but it's only...
Yeah, but I'm talking about the... Cassie, I'm talking about the external drive. You can't see that, right? The
right,
backup
right,
drive. Yes, yeah, so I think you just want to format that. If you can't see it on any of those machines, then just format it.
That's what I was worried. Yeah. Okay, that's the word I was looking for, and I had a head injury, so I went blank. I totally apologize.
Oh, you don't have to have a head injury to go blank. I go blank every day.
Well, I'm 51, so it kind of goes with my age, I think, but I use the head injury as an excuse, so I don't have to bring up the age.
Was that the accident that took you off the road?
No, that was a separate one. I was actually building a house after I got the word that I could no longer drive a truck because of my back injury.
Oh, back injury,
I was in there, and one of the lovely marble shelved mirror dresser tops that they don't hook on there in furniture stores fell right on top of my head.
Oh, well, my God. You're lucky to be alive, Cassie.
God, my little 4-year-old was standing right next to me.
Oh, my God.
Didn't get a scratch on her, so I'll take it all day long.
That's called being a parent, isn't it? I'd take it for the kid, as long as it didn't hurt the kid, yeah.
Sir, oh, you are the most wonderful man in the world, and so I can get if I forget anything or didn't write it down.
I'll make sure Josh puts it on the show notes. You bet.
Oh my God, I have got to send you something special.
No, don't send me anything. It's my pleasure. It's what I do.
I know it's what you do, but I just even if it's a card, I know you probably have.
Oh, I'll take a card. You want to send me a card? I'll take a card.
Okay.
Thank you, Cassie. All right, sweetheart. All right. Have a wonderful day.
God bless you.
God bless you, too.
Most wonderful man on this planet.
Oh, you sweetheart. All right.
Thank you.
All right, darling. Take care.
Okay. God bless.
Bye-bye. God bless. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.